This is the Kevin and Bean Show on the world famous K-Rock 106.7 KROQ. We know how to eat people.
It's called Soylent Green.
I don't even understand that.
You said we know how to eat people.
Is this civil war at the Kevin and Bean Show or just sectarian violence? You got to tell me what the distinction is here.
There is no distinction. It's civil war and sectarian violence.
It's ridiculous. Okay.
Here's the thing. Lisa, stay out of this. If you don't know what you're talking about, stay out of it.
Woman.
We have a topic that has been splitting us right down the middle, and we are in danger of killing each other. And so we need to actually bring this onto the air and get it over with and get it out.
Get it settled,
Hard times behind the scenes at the Kevin and Bean Show this week, ladies and gentlemen. I know it seems like one big happy family. You tune in and get some yucks while you hear the show in the morning. But I'm telling you, it is practically hair pulling in the hallways.
After the show in the office, it is screaming and yelling and throwing things, and it's getting ugly.
It's because Dave's so wrong. That's why.
And that's because Dave, the King of Mexico, and Omar are both.
What the hell is wrong with you guys?
The most wrong people on the planet. Now, here's what we're arguing about. Uncrustables, which are good.
No. The best.
If you don't mind, I'd like to present the case first. Uncrustable, for those of you that don't know, you can get them in the freezer section at your store, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they are pre-prepared peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
With no crust.
With no crust.
Uncrustables.
So you take them out.
Hey. If you're going to present it, don't mock it, dude.
Good point. You have to be objective.
All right, you present the Uncrustables.
No, you're doing a good job.
All right, the show. You have to take them out and thaw them out. For like 30 minutes before you can enjoy
it. Misconception.
Hold on, hold on.
I got this one, Omar. This is a misconception.
Hold on, let me finish. And the argument is that peanut butter and jelly sandwiches made by hand with fresh peanut butter, fresh jelly, and fresh bread, our argument is better than Uncrustables. Their argument is no way the Uncrustables beat even a handmade fresh peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Okay, I want to hear about the half hour thawing thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Dave is arguing that.
You do have to thaw them, right?
Right. Yeah.
But when you buy them from the store, they're in the frozen section. But once you buy them, you take them out, drive home, put them in your fridge. They're thawed by the time you even get to them.
By the way, untrue.
It clearly states in the box.
It's way too
frozen.
Do you buy these on a regular basis?
Yes. My wife eats them daily.
Okay. Then
she knows the goodness of them.
Thaw in like 20 minutes.
20 to
you
30 minutes.
Okay, fine.
Oh, wow, 20 minutes. That's so much less.
Listen to me.
Here's the thing. It takes
whatever. It's no big deal. You don't have to wash any dishes. You prepare your little dumb sandwich.
This is what it's been like for a week.
Okay. You make your damn sandwich. What's the worst part of this damn sandwich? The crust. The crust blows. If you don't want the crust.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Not if you use fresh bread. It's not bad. It's not like
and
it's
some
hard.
Of us enjoy crust, you idiot. Listen to me.
I don't
Listen
care what you enjoy.
Listen to me. You've had your point. Let me make my point here. This is not just about Uncrustables. To me, it angers me because it's symbolic of what is the downfall of our society.
Wow.
A peanut butter and jelly sandwich in and of itself is convenience food. It's something you eat when you don't have time
what
to make real food.
What is more convenient than reaching over, picking up one of these, opening a goddamn bag, and oh, check it out. You're still making your sandwich. You're still opening your... I'm enjoying peanut butter and jelly goodness right now, man.
Stop yelling.
How much more convenience do you need from making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich? It's like saying, I'm going to go smoke a cigarette, but, you know, I just don't have time to make that type of commitment. I'm just going to chew some Nicorette instead. It's right there. It's nicotine. It's prepackaged.
What does it take a minute to make a sandwich? Maybe?
That's not the same thing.
It is the same thing. You want a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
A cigarette and a piece of gum is not the same thing.
And a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and a prepackaged hockey puck in your freezer with crap stuffed in it is not the same thing either.
These are the same ingredients. It's more convenient. Are you eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich
right now? You also don't get the option to choose whatever peanut butter and jelly you want to make. Sometimes, sometimes I want almond butter with a little bit of raspberry. Maybe I'll mix it up and get myself a little bit of clove peanut butter.
Gourmet douche.
You're right, I am.
Dude, it's peanut butter and jelly.
Yeah, like they're great.
All right. Hold on, everybody.
Honey,
everybody,
what do you want?
Shh, everyone, hold on. Just for a second.
Kevin, how about a 12-second musical interlude while the crew calms down?
All I'm about to break out the baseball bat, people.
Sure.
Now, here's the deal. Yeah, here's the deal. We all like Uncrustables. I mean, I think we all do. Do you?
They taste good.
Yeah. Oh, they're delicious.
Mm. They're good, but real is better. That's the
what's
our side.
About this?
Well, what I like,
it's prepackaged.
Can I just say,
yes, Lisa.
There's too much jelly in there for me.
It's pre-made. You don't get the choice.
I like to choose how much of peanut butter and how much of jelly I like.
Sometimes you're just not.
Lisa likes jelly.
Sometimes you're not in the mood for too much peanut butter. Sometimes you want a little bit more sweet. Sometimes you want to overdo it with the peanut butter because you're like, you know what? I'm in the mood for some rich flavor.
It's a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
I'm sorry. It's not a peanut butter and jelly. It's a weak-ass ripoff.
How many peanut butter and jelly sandwiches have you had this morning?
None.
Well, that's because me and Homer already had one.
Hey, Dave.
I don't want any.
Hey, Dave, he couldn't have made one in this amount of time?
No.
What's wrong
and
with
by the
you?
Way, there's no ingredients to something that takes 30 minutes to make.
If you don't want any, what the hell are you doing arguing this?
All right, you shut up, Omar. I think I hate you more than ever.
There's no convenience to something that takes 30 minutes to make, by the way. It's ridiculous.
It doesn't take 30 minutes.
The phone lines are jammed.
We have to keep moving. Lazy couch potato.
How lazy can you be?
Disgusting pigs.
Yeah. Directions. Keep frozen until ready to eat. Number two, thaw 30 to 60 minutes. At room temperature, 30 minutes to an hour.
Pretty convenient right there.
And number three, eat within 8 hours of defrosting for best flavor. Now, I'm fine with Uncrustables. I think they taste good. If you don't have the option of making a real sandwich, those are fantastic. If you do have the option, you lose. Those
are
worse.
They're a little pricey.
How much are they for a box?
Well, a box is $3.49.
$3.49 for four little kind of half sandwiches.
That's nothing.
Right. Now Alex
went
out and
bought. Oh, listen, money bags.
Alex went out and bought all the stuff to make your peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for $10.48, and I was figuring out how many sandwiches you could make.
Right.
And it's like 40.
You're better deal.
Paying more for an inferior product. Paying more for an admittedly inferior product. Great job,
no
guys.
Way.
Good for you. Keep it
this
up.
This is the Kevin and Bean Show on the world-famous K-Rock. If you haven't figured it out, it's Uncrustables versus the real PB&J. Let's do one email from K-Rock listener Gavel. Although Uncrustables are a very convenient and nutritious treat, homemade PB&J sandwiches are now and forever and will always be superior to Uncrustables.
That's
come on, common sense dictates that anything made with love and by hand is superior to a machine robot-made product. My decision is final, is what he said.
Wow, well, his decision
stupid.
Is final.
His name's Gavel, dude.
Let's take some calls. We'll start with Dennis. He's in Chino. What do you think? Uncrustables versus real homemade PB&J. What do you think?
Real homemade PB&J.
And how come?
With the Uncrustables, you either have not enough jelly. I have three boys at home. And one wants more peanut butter. The other one wants more jelly. And my wife bought a press last week that gets the crust out and pinches the edges, you know, that bottle cap pinch that it has on the sides.
Yeah, that the Uncrustables has.
Okay, so you're paying more to make Uncrustables.
Yeah, come
good
on.
Job.
That costs a lot of money.
So you're saying you get your choice of flavors and everything else with it.
You get your choice of flavors, right. How much jelly, how much peanut butter.
What right. more flavor do you want? Grape, strawberry. Those are the two
yeah,
main
but
ones.
Sometimes in an Uncrustable, one overdoes the other. And you don't want that, Dave. Do you understand that?
What are you talking about?
Some of us do not want diabetes. We're against it.
Javier in West Covina, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
PB&J, hands down. This is the most ridiculous argument I've heard in my life.
Thank you.
That jelly that comes in those whatever the hell you call them.
Uncrustables.
Disc of death.
How dare
the
you?
The horrible jelly I've ever had in my life. It's like batteries coming out of a raccoon's crap.
Yes. But at least you have to wait 30 to 60 minutes to get it.
It's the same jelly that you buy in the stores.
Not true.
It's Smuckers.
It's not the premium Smuckers. It's the whack ass Smuckers. That's how they do.
What
that's
are you
what
talking
they're
about.
Gonna...
The whack.
How do you
how
know?
Do you
it's
know?
The
were you
whack-ass?
At the
plant? Yeah. Did you make it? Maybe I've seen some underground documents that you don't know about. This is not. This is not.
All right, hold on. Mike,
this is not like a TV dinner where you're taking steak and potatoes. Something that would, if you were to make it on your own, take a lot of time and effort to make, and you're putting it into a convenient prepackaged thing. This is peanut butter and jelly. Something in and of itself, which was already convenient and easy to make.
Does it
it's
take,
like the
does
bottom
it take
line,
time and effort?
Bottom line bachelor food. How much more convenience do you need? Why don't you just get an IV drip of peanut butter and jelly and stick it in your goddamn arm and just have it drip into your veins all day long?
Listen.
It's easy. It's convenient. It's convenient. I don't have to do nothing. It's IV drip of peanut butter jelly in my arm.
Look, all I'm saying is when I'm over your place and we both want a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, I'll just take Jenny's out of the fridge, eat it, and you're making yours, and I'm done. Boom.
Yeah, Dave, that can take an hour to make your own.
Yes. Doesn't matter. By the time he takes the ingredients out, I'm done. I'm
Mike is right when he says the steak and the other, you know, if it takes you a long time to prepare, it does make sense for
it's
convenience
steak.
Sake. But
right.
But I'm saying for convenience sake, you don't need a peanut butter and jelly sandwich handmade is not all that inconvenient, people.
Okay.
How lazy are you?
It's not about it's about convenience. It's about saving
How
time.
How lazy are you?
How late are you every morning? If you wanted a freaking peanut butter and jelly sandwich and you wanted to get to work on time, if you really were hungry, are you going to stop and make a 2 minute, half a minute sandwich, whatever
yes.
it is?
Yes.
Are you going to start
and
getting
be late?
Yes.
But would you rather just grab one of these and be on time?
And have an inferior sandwich?
No.
I'd make my own.
Are you going to get pre-chewed gum, too?
Hey, guys. Yeah. Hey, guys.
Pre-chewed gum. Sorry,
we're out of time. Oh.
We need
to
taste test.
There.
We didn't do
I'm
our
sorry.
Taste test.
Jessica, Uncrustables, they're cheaper than buying all the rest, which we already figured out is not true.
No.
Andrea says, neither. I make peanut butter and jelly burritos.
Oh, those are so good, too, though, by the way.
That is strong.
That is strong.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Matt in Norwalk says, handmade, but he sells Uncrustable and can never keep them on the shelves because they sell so much. Myra says, handmade, how hard is it to cut off your own crust? Mike says, Border Patrol agents feed illegal aliens Uncrustables.
See, they have
is that
the word.
For or that, against?
I don't know.
They have
that must
the
be
world.
Where Dave got the taste for it, though.
Everywhere we go, people instantly hate Bean. You get on an elevator, hate.
Well, here's what I found out recently that's interesting. It's not just people that hate me. It's birds, too.
Bean has a bird. He does his show from a home in just outside Seattle. And a bird hates him. Hates him.
By the way, you say a home as if I've been put away, like in a padded room somewhere.
Right.
Oh, yeah. We sent him to a home.
That kind of home, yeah. He has a bird that lands on the window and starts squawking at him every day, and he hates Bean.
I've never had a bird hate me.
Me either.
You're talking about the Blue Jay of Hate who's been stalking me for about 2 years?
The Blue Jay of Hate.
2 years? Seriously?
Yeah. Yes, 2 years. This bird has been up my ass.
Why wouldn't I know that you won't kill even the smallest of animals because you're screwed up in the head. But why wouldn't you at least get, I don't know, like a BB gun or something, just kind of sting it a little bit, just to kind of get it to go away and not be there.
I'm not going
to
shoot a bird just because he lives in my yard.
No, but this is the Blue Jay of Hate.
Right, but it's his home. He lives here, too.
Right, but he's full of hate.
I can coexist. Look, dude, so am years, I. He coexists with me.
That's true. He should take you out. So 2 years a bird is squawking at me? I'm sorry. I got to take it out.
This bird, I know it sounds like Kevin's joking. It's not just that this bird's annoying. This bird follows me. This bird chases me. This bird comes and peers at me with his beady little bird eyes.
Really?
He sits outside the window for an hour at a time and just looks at me and goes, rah, rah, rah. It really is kind of, I mean, it's to the point now where I don't know what's going on. It concerns me.
You're
going to
be walking outside one day and the bird, the Blue Jay of Hate, is going to swoop down and just take out an eye with his beak.
Oh,
well,
wow.
Hopefully it's the one with the tube.
That'd be the way to go, wouldn't it?
The Blue Jay of Hate.
Pecked to death by a Blue Jay.
If I'm telling you the honest truth, if that bird was doing that to me, I would have no problem killing that bird. None.
Dude, you don't kill a bird just because
you kill
it
the Blue
does
Jay
bird,
of Hate.
Because it does bird things. You don't kill
but
a bird.
But the other
Come
birds
on.
Aren't mad at you. Just this one. This is the only bird that hates you, right?
Yeah. As far as I know, did I accidentally knock his nest down? I don't know what happened. I've never done anything to the Blue Jay of Hate that I'm aware of, but we're a little early right now. If it were half an hour from right now, I'd be able to turn the mic up and you'd be able to hear the Blue Jay of Hate because he's like clockwork.
It's just like women. Women instantly hate Bean. Just like as soon as they meet him, they hate him.
I think this bird hates the sound of his voice.
This bird is annoyed by everything Bean stands for.
Now, what
this
is
bird
this note?
Hates the post office. He hates everything.
This note I'm getting from producer Lightning says that we have somebody on the phone to talk to us on this topic.
Well, no, we lined up the Blue Jay of Hate. We have him. Hello? Are you the Blue Jay of Hate?
I hate Bean.
That's him. That's the Blue Jay of Hate. I can verify that's definitely him.
What? Why do you hate Bean?
Oh, God, shut up, Bean! Oh, I like the post office. Oh, Edmund Fitzgerald, greatest song ever. Oh, Barry Manilow. But, blind animals. Oh, if the season ended today, the Mariners would be in first place.
But Blue Jay of Hate, I have to ask, you don't live in the house with me. How are you able to hear all this stuff?
Why you won't shut up! You hear it everywhere, all over the island! Brad! Oh, Prairie Home Companion, Jessica Keeler! Brad! Oh, I read on my blog today! I want you dead!
Have you tried to get any other birds on your side, Blue Jay of Hate?
Yes! They don't care? Try to get hawks.
Yeah.
Try to get eagles.
They don't care?
Try to get sparrows.
Wow.
They don't care.
You're a lonely voice in the wilderness.
I'm the only one who knows he must die.
Are you going to try and kill him?
Back! 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 Yes.
Yeah, yes, you are. Okay. Can you give me any kind of a hint as to how I should expect to die?
Yes. You will be pecked from the inside out.
Oh, wow.
How are you going to get inside?
I'm going in the back door.
Oh, no. No.
Don't bend over to feed the animals.
Look, you may not approve of what they do, but you have to be in awe of the ingenuity of some of the guys behind bars. I missed the story out of El Salvador. What do you know about these prisoners? What was going on down there, Ralph?
Well, apparently, in a maximum security prison, authorities found four prisoners that were smuggling cell phones inside the prison. Now, how they were smuggling them sounded painful at best.
I'm just trying to think. They just don't let you carry something into prison. I mean, you pretty much have to hide it, right?
No. I mean, and there's been a long history of people smuggling stuff into prisons for years. I mean, drugs and weapons and that kind of stuff. But as far as I can tell, this is the first time they took x-rays of the inmates and found out that they had smuggled cell phones wrapped in plastic bags into their bodies, up their butts.
No.
Cell phones.
Authorities found 9 cell phone chips, as well as the cell phones stuffed up the butts of these four guys, and 1 cell phone charger.
Well, you got to have a charger.
Because really, once it gets, you know, the battery goes down, they're no good.
Oh, my God.
Do prisoners in El Salvador have electricity in their cells? Do they have a place to plug in their phone to recharge it?
I don't know if they have electricity up their butts.
He was plugged in up his ass. That's where he was charging the phone, actually.
Wow, 9 cell phones. I'd give up one of those cell phones and bring an iPod or something. I'd mix it up a little bit. But
4 guys, 4 cell phones, 9 cell phone chips, and 1 cell phone charger were found.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Inside the 4 cellmates.
And they were using those cell phones to continue to run their crime operations outside the prison, right?
That's what they planned. Apparently, they were extorting business owners. They were a very organized gang, and this way they could call from inside the prison and still carry on their illegal activities.
That's funny. Well, we wanted to find out more about this because, let's face it, most of us on this show, pretty clueless when it comes to prison, but we do have a K-Rock listener named Rudy, who you know from his Raider updates, and let's dial him up right now, because if anybody knows about this, like, is this happening in America, too? What do you guys think? I don't know.
Rudy's done some time. Maybe he knows. He's the guy to ask. Call him and see what he's up to. Probably still getting over the Raiders loss.
Oh, that was rough. Yeah.
Hello. Hello,
Rudy.
Hey,
Rudy.
What's up, guys?
Rudy. Rudy, you're right.
Yeah. What's happening? You guys call me. Want to talk about jail?
This connection is bad.
Yeah. What's going on with the phone? Where did we reach you, Rudy?
I'm in prison. I'm in Twin Towers, downtown LA.
You're inside now. You're in jail now, as we call.
Yeah, man. I got a little trouble over the weekend. You know, like, I was playing like a Raiders pickup game. You know.
Yeah.
And like, we were all arguing. I was arguing with Ghost Dog, that homeboy from La Cienega. He goes, hey, I want to be Randy Moss. And I'm like, nah, dog, I'm Randy Moss. And he's like, nah, bitch, I'm Randy Moss. And we were down at MacArthur Park, so, you know, I had to handle my business. I shank him a couple times, you know.
There's okay, hold on, Rudy. Rudy, hold on a second.
The popos, they handcuff me.
Yeah, I can't listen. This phone.
We can't.
This connection.
Is there anything you can do with the phone?
Are you on a phone there in the jail?
Listen, I think I can clear up the connection real quick. Hold on.
Oh, wait a minute.
Much better.
Was that cell phone in your ass?
Oh, hell yeah.
Rudy.
They don't allow you have no cell phones in prison, but I thought you got to do what you got to do, eh?
Oh, no wonder it was that odd, muffled echo sound.
Oh, man, I should have used a smaller cell phone. I use a rotary phone. I don't know. You could probably use one of those rotary cell phones? Yeah, if one of you got like a Razor or one of them new chocolate dogs, yeah. It'd be fitting if it was a chocolate phone. You know what I'm saying?
Sure, it would be fitting, yes.
But man, yeah, it was an old Pac Bell, man. Damn.
Rudy, are you? Well, that sounds very painful.
Yeah, what's up, eh? All right, so what
are you? Are you holding that phone with your hand right now? You pull it right from your ass, then right to your face?
Yeah, no problems, eh? It kind of smells like my cellmate's pee-pee.
Oh, stop it.
You know what I'm saying?
Listen.
You got to prepare for the situation, you know what I'm saying?
So,
you're swapping the poop deck.
So apparently there is cell phone smuggling going on even in prisons here in the United States.
Yeah, no, you know what I'm saying, dog? Like, you still got to handle your business once you're in prison. You know what I'm saying? Just because you get locked up doesn't mean you can't handle your business on the streets. You know what I'm saying? Like, Little Trigger, my cousin,
right.
You know, he's got his weed business down in El Monte, you know what I'm saying, off Peck Road. You know, so he needs me. I got connections now inside. So, like, sometimes he needs me to... darn.
What is that?
What's that?
Whose phone is that, Rudy?
It's my phone. It's probably Stagrel. Hold on real quick.
He's got another phone in his ass?
What's up? Yeah. Nah. Listen, I'm on the phone with Kevin and Bean, bitch. I can't talk right now, right? All right. I talked to my lawyer earlier. All right. Listen, I got to go. I'm on the radio, all right? Whatever. Hey, what's up, guys?
So that's...
Rudy. You pulled a phone out of your ass to talk to us, and then another phone rang in your ass, too?
Oh, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, why would I limit myself to one line? You know what I'm saying?
I don't know. Room?
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like
discomfort?
The DEA, they'd be phone tapping me or whatever. I got a couple of lines. You know what I'm saying? They can't handle me.
Well, now, what's that one?
Rudy.
That's probably... Oh, man.
Another phone?
Yeah, it's probably Victor. No. Oh!
Oh.
That one's got to hurt.
Hello? Oh,
that sounded like a payphone.
That'd be way up there.
It was a BlackBerry.
Hey, wow.
Now it's a BrownBerry.
Here's a word from our friend Harvey Levin from TMZ.com.
This is Harvey Levin reporting for TMZ.com. We have just received confirmation that this morning at 2:43 a.m., Santa Claus was arrested by North Pole Sheriff's deputies for SUI, slaying under the influence. According to the Sheriff's Department, Claus was flagged for speeding in a 2006 Blizzard Master XL sleigh, allegedly flying at 80 miles an hour in a 45-mile-an-hour zone while being pulled by 8 tiny intoxicated reindeer. A sobriety test revealed the famous gift giver's blood alcohol level to be 0.12, exceeding the North Pole's 0.08 legal limit. In addition, during the arrest, Santa was reportedly out of control. Sources say he tried to evade arrest, was abusive to the arresting deputies, and was heard spouting racist comments. As always, our TMZ cameras were there.
My life is you mother I'm gonna you. Don't you know I own the North Pole? I will spend all of my money to get even with you. F***ing elves. The elves are responsible for all the wars in the world. Are you an elf? I bet you're a f***ing elf.
Put your head down.
What do you think you're looking at, sugar plum?
After hearing the comments from less than jolly old Saint Nick, a spokesperson for the Elf Defamation League made the following statement.
We have seen the videotape and we have heard the repulsive remarks made by Mr. Claus. And unfortunately, we elves feel that we have no choice but to boycott Christmas this year. Despite our long working relationship with Mr. Claus, we cannot in good conscience build any toys for him, help him load his sleigh, or participate in any other traditional holiday preparations. Let's see how that fat racist reindeer f***er does on his own this year.
How will this falling out between Santa and the elves affect Christmas? I don't know, and frankly, I don't care. I'm Jewish. For TMZ.com, I'm Harvey the Hammer Levin. Happy Hanukkah.
It is tempting to think that everyone agrees with us when it comes to President Bush and his Vice President Dick Cheney.
So,
but it turns out Dick Cheney, one of the most popular guys in America.
Dick Cheney.
Is that the music he comes on to when he gives his speeches around the country? Because that surprises me. It doesn't seem like the kind of stuff a guy from Wyoming would be listening to.
There is a little girl named Grace Mosier who lives with her mom and dad in Topeka, Kansas. Mm-hmm. And she's 6 years old. And the New York Times wrote a big story about her, about how she is obsessed with Dick Cheney, our vice president. Six-year-old.
That seems odd.
What does that tell you about her parents, first of all?
Yeah. What six-year-old? Yeah, no kidding. But what six-year-old even knows who Dick Cheney is and would even care if he came on her television set?
I don't know. According to the article, he's her hero. And that's the most bizarre thing. So then the New York Times also printed a poll that they had taken of the approval rating of our vice president. And nationally, his approval rating is less than 20%.
Well, I'm not surprised. There's no one in government doing well right now. Congress is at 16% right now, so I'm not surprised to see the vice president down that low.
So under 20%. But in the mid-states, in the middle of the country, you know, Wyoming and Kansas, places like that, according to the New York Times, Dick Cheney is treated like a returning war hero. I mean, he is...
Really?
God reincarnated.
The second coming.
Yes.
They
just go crazy for him.
Hey, I have a lot of respect for the man. He shot a dude in the face and walked.
That's
you think I could have gotten away with that? You think I could have said, oh, sorry, accident. But Dick Cheney, he definitely has some sort of quality, some sort of charisma that gets him going places.
That is true. I mean, how often does a sitting politician shoot another guy in the face?
Hardly
just
ever.
Walk away from it and go, how about that?
But here's what's interesting, though, because, you know, when I first heard about this story, I thought, why is Dick Cheney out on the road, you know, going to places like Kansas that are so overwhelmingly Republican? I mean, you really don't need to go. And I guess the reason is that you have so much support there that you can raise tons of money that the party can then use around the country for other races.
That's what he does.
They are tight.
So he travels to Casper, Wyoming. He travels to Michigan. He travels to Topeka. And none of the national media covers it, but all of the local media covers
it.
And he supposedly gets a hero's welcome.
How about that?
We were trying to figure out just exactly what it is he's got.
Our approval ratings in the liberal media may not be as high as they once were, but we still feel like we're doing a lot of good work. A lot of you are still enjoying the fruits of some pretty terrific tax cuts. And a lot of you are feeling safer today against terrorists who are still desperately trying to cause mass death here in the United States. And I'm pretty sure we'd all be a lot worse off if these Dean Democrats take over Congress. Don't hold back. So how are you feeling, Kansas? I can't hear you. Kansas, are you feeling all right? All right, then. Let's rock and roll. Hit it, Steve.
What?
You show us everything you've got.
He sings?
You keep on dancing and the room gets hot. You drive us wild, we'll drive you crazy.
I have no idea.
You keep on shouting. You keep on shouting. I can hear you, Kansas. I want to rock and roll all night and party every day. I want to rock and roll all night. Republican Party every day. I want to rock and roll all night and party every day. Come on!
So there you go. That's a little taste.
I had no idea. That's
very impressive. I may vote for him.
There are a lot of stories on the internet that you come across on a daily basis. You have no idea if they're true or not. That's why we try to get the experts behind the studies.
There's a book that is out in stores now called The Female Brain. And I know what you're thinking. Wow, that's a short book.
But actually...
A lot of people are talking about it. Dr. Lawan Brizendine has written the book, and she has done research, over 1,000 scientific studies on the brain, and has learned a lot about, as you would expect, the real differences between men's brain and women's brain.
She did 1,000 studies and came up with something as amazing as women talk more than men. Really? You needed 1,000 studies to know that?
And by the way, also on that tip, men think about sex every 52 seconds. Women, how often do you think?
Once a day.
Once a day, Lisa.
Is it?
Exactly, once a day.
Wow. Men, 52 seconds, so once a minute.
Yes.
Women once a day.
Once every 24 hours.
So awesome. It's kind of a miracle that those two coincide at the same time where you can actually make some sexy time, because it seems like the chances are pretty slim.
Yeah.
But there's some real fascinating stuff in this book. And as Kevin mentioned, women talk way, 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 way more than men. It's not even close.
She says three times as much. And I think three times as much is way low.
It does seem low, that's
well,
for sure.
Well, it is for some men. Some of you all don't talk at all.
Some of you women talk a lot.
And there's some women who everything in their head comes out their mouth.
Yes.
Yeah, believe me, we know. Anyway, we asked Lightning to line up somebody on the team for us, and we have Dr. Marcus Wolson, PhD from Massachusetts Maritime Academy. Now, Doctor, this is the Fort Lauderdale extension of the Massachusetts Maritime Academy?
Yeah, that's right. We just opened up a satellite campus here in South Florida, and we couldn't be happier.
Okay. And you were or were not involved in the research that went into this book that we're talking about, the female brain?
No, I'm doing my own research. I'm doing a counter study called the male brain.
Oh.
And I've read Ms. Brizendine's work, and I think a lot of it's, well, suspect, to say the least, in terms of scientific study.
She said the average woman talks 20,000 words a day. The average guy, 7,000.
Yeah, well, that much you got right. What she didn't say is that 15,000 of those 20,000 words are said while you're trying to watch goddamn television! She wants to talk about your mother-in-law. Outstanding. Well, let me just hit the TiVo on pause for the 100th time during the half hour I'm watching television and turn all my attention to you, sweet cheek.
Dr. Wilson, are you sure that you're subjective enough to make
objective
a study?
Objective enough.
Will you objective shut up, woman? Are you enough? Shut up!
I've said like 20 words.
Your voice is like shaving my head with a cheese grater.
Dr. Brizendine, who's the woman that wrote the study, she says that women devote more brain cells to talking than men.
Yeah, well, they got about 8. So I guess 7 of those cells are directed towards talking.
That is not scientific.
Shut the hell up!
I got to say, I'm going to ask Bean's question again because it seems like a scientific study needs to be very objective, and you seem to be, I don't know, a little emotionally involved in the topic.
Oh, but this broad who wrote the book about the female brain, she's completely subjective. What is she? Is she a llama? Is she some sort of other species where she's not connected?
All right, here's what she says, and let me tell you what you get. We'll get what you think.
Oh, no, please tell me what she says. I need to hear more about what women think.
Women have an 8-lane superhighway for processing emotion, while men have a small country road.
Yeah, women have an 8-lane superhighway. The thing is, they're in all the lanes, and they got their left turn signal on.
Now you're talking about women driving?
And they're putting on their makeup in the rear view while they're in the 8-lane highway. I'm behind them in a Hummer, and I can't get to goddamn work.
You're a doctor, you're a PhD.
Yeah, I'm a PhD.
All right.
We got to be honest.
In what? Don't kill yourself.
Dr. Wilson, please, we're trying to conduct an interview here. Let's all be civil here. The Massachusetts Maritime Academy, Fort Lauderdale Extension, just doesn't sound, I don't know, like the most reputable school. This woman was University of California, this woman who did the book.
Oh, I'm sorry, Stephen Hawking. I didn't know you were putting together a catalog of the world's best colleges.
All right, let me run one more thing that she said by and get your opinion on this.
Yeah, let's hear more from the broad.
She says that women actually get a buzz out of hearing their own voices, and then she goes on to say, talking triggers a flood of brain chemicals, which gives women a rush similar to heroin addicts.
Well, that's got to be true, because why else would they just talk and talk and talk and talk? And the thing is, the amazing part is not that their voice gives them a buzz, but they don't hear it. They don't hear what they're saying. They don't hear their own voices. It's like farts. I think they say it's like you smell your own fart, you're like, oh, it's not so bad.
What?
But somebody sitting next to you in a bus, like, Jesus Christ, what crawled up inside of you and died?
What are you talking about?
Shut up!
You're not a doctor, are you?
That's what talking to a woman is like. You're like, oh, dear God, doesn't she hear that sound? Doesn't she know? How do her ears not bleed?
What sound are you talking about?
Oh, for Christ's sake, will you go kill yourself? How do you two work with her all day long with her talking?
Well, we find what she says in most cases to be quite interesting.
I'm not that chatty, really.
Oh, will you listen to yourself? I'd rather stick an ice pick in my ear than listen to you for one goddamn second longer.
Dr. Marcus Wilson, is it possible that you just got out of a relationship?
Oh, I wouldn't say that. I just got freed from a prison. A marriage that was held for 27 years.
I think she got freed from prison, frankly.
She got freed from prison. I'd like to stick you in a pickle barrel and push you over Niagara Falls.
Hey, if we ever get to a point where space travel is cheap and we can take the most annoying people in the world and put them in a rocket and send them to Pluto, can it please be these two? I'm sure if you're like us, you've had the exact same thought every time you've seen Kevin Federline and Britney Spears on the news, which is, I don't know which one of them to feel more sorry for, because really they're both in such bad situations with who they have to be married to.
Oh, clearly her.
You feel worse for her than you do for him?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Clearly.
It's tough, I think.
Yeah.
But the happy kids have been together what now? It seems like they've been together like a year or something, maybe not married quite that long, but we've been hearing they've had some trouble. And they're working on a plan to get their marriage back on track. We thought we'd get an update from the happy lovers right now. Good morning, guys.
Hey, y'all. Morning.
Booyakah.
Brandy, how's little Sean Preston? What's he up to this morning?
Oh, he's so adorable. He just, like, burped and farted everywhere. He's just like his daddy.
Yeah. Burp and fart. Booyah.
Is it true that we read that that your husband tried to pierce your kid's ears? Is that story true?
Yeah. He didn't even, ask me and some stuff. He's like, bud, taking the kid. I was like, what? What kid?
Next is the tattoo. I don't understand the problem. Like I've told you many times before, you're born a G. No, you know what I'm saying? You're born a G.
Kevin, I told you, you need to communicate more with Brittany about making choices about your children.
All right, Dr. Phil, my bad.
Something
Dr. Phil.
You have to share and work on together.
Wait a second here. Dr. Phil, are you on the phone with Brittany and Kevin?
Good morning, Kevin and Bean. How are you?
Well, we're good. Well, that was the next story we were going to bring up, as we heard that Britney Spears and Kevin Federlisi were going to see you for help in their marriage.
I've moved in with them so I can work around the clock, 24 hours a day, to try to get their dog to hunt.
He felt like we were the type of couple that was labor intensive. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So he moved in, and it's awesome.
I like it. Really? I like it. Dr. Feezy, Dr. Feezy, P-H-I-L, he's a doctor.
Sure. Brittany, how come you like having Dr. Phil around? It seemed like it would be a little crowded there with all of you living in the same place.
Dr. Phil is teaching us to love smart. You need to love smart
You need to love smart.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Not loving dumbly, loving smartly.
Brittany, give us a little more info on that.
I got my work cut out for me here. Yeah.
Dr. Phil, how long have you been living with the happy couple?
We've been here about 2 weeks, round the clock, 24 hours a day treatment.
Wow.
And I think it's helping.
Really? You think their marriage can be saved?
Nope. What is your problem?
I don't know what you're talking about, man. I don't know what you're talking about. You know what I'm saying? I'm just trying to live my life. You know what I'm saying? Coming up every day, keeping my head up like a thug.
Are Kevin and Brittany open to your suggestions, Dr. Phil?
They are open, and we talk about it, and then they forget everything I just said.
Right.
It's like talking, to Kevin, quite frankly.
Dr. Phil, what would you say, and I hate to simplify the relationship that they have, but what would you say is their biggest problem? Is it a lack of communication, lack of respect, lack of equality? What?
Well, I've tried to simplify and to narrow in on the main source of their problem.
And what's that?
I think if you work on the largest problem, the smaller ones tend to fix themselves.
Okay.
And I think the biggest difficulty they're running into in their relationship is they're both retards. And two retards together, you just get a big retarded relationship.
And Brittany, what do you get out of that?
I learned that it's not my first rodeo from Dr. Phil.
Uh-huh. Right, it's not your first rodeo.
It's not my first rodeo because it's my second marriage and second time's the charm, according to the Dalai Lama and Madonna and everybody that I'm reading in Kabbalah. And I'm trying to get deep, guys. I'm trying to get
and
really
love
serious.
Smart.
Smart, Kevin.
Love smart. Okay.
What does that mean, Brittany? Explain love smart to us.
Love smartly is not dumbly. So it's like using your brain and stuff when you're talking and you're like, okay, I've got the baby. I'm going to get in the car. Does the baby get in shotgun? No. The baby has to be strapped down like NASCAR.
That's right. You got that right.
Put this child in the car seat. But
Dr. Phil, you have to be happy hearing her talk like that. It sounds like you're getting through.
No, she won't remember in 4 minutes.
Okay. Well, that's
next thing you know, the kid's on top of the car. She's driving away from Starbucks with her purse and the child on the roof.
Ooh, Starbucks. Yeah.
All right. Try to pay attention, Brittany. Listen, one more thing. Kevin Federline, as an artist, I know every time we talk to you, it seems like whatever's going on in your life finds its way into your work. Has that been the case with Dr. Phil in the house?
Oh, for Sheezy. You know what I'm saying? In fact, just a week ago, I convinced Dr. Feezy to go with me to the studio, the Disco D studio, you know what I'm saying? Because I was like, I felt like he's become such a big part of my life.
Right.
You know, and probably the biggest thing in my life is my art.
Of course, you know what I'm saying? You're
so
an
artist. I wanted to include him in it.
Okay.
And we were riding the Escalade over to Disco D's, I found out we have a lot more in common than you would think. You know what I'm saying? We started talking about, how he came up, you know what I'm saying, as a doctor and in the show business.
Right.
And then how I came up.
You guys have nothing in common.
That's what you think.
Now, it turns out Kevin and I are a lot more alike than I would have suspected.
Is that right? Okay.
It is.
Now, did you watch him while he was in the studio making this song?
No, we did. I did a song with him.
He collaborated.
Collaborate. Dr. Phil, you're on the song.
Ho-po's out.
Fantastic. What's this called?
This is called Two Peas in a Pod.
I don't know, Kevin. I'm not much of a rapper.
Oh, come on, Dr. Phil. You know what I'm saying? Typically comes from within.
Well, I do have a lot of heart. All right, I'll give it a try. Let's see how it sounds.
We're two peas in a pod. We live off women.
If money is the juice,
a female is the lemon.
Gotta squeeze.
get what you need. Two coattailing douchebags fueled by greed.
Well, they call me Dr. Phil. I give bad advice. I got my head in Oprah's ass like a board in a vice.
And I'm K-Fed. Britney pays my bills. I move from Fresno to the Hollywood Hills.
Coming out of Texas, like George W., my lack of compassion just might trouble you. Getting a divorce or your mother should die. I'll charge you lots of money, then tell you not to cry.
I'm a dope-smoking wigger with a white trash flare. Pants around my ankles, braids in my hair.
What is your problem? That's my catchphrase.
I got the IQ of a monkey in a cage. I bang a fat hoe. Her name is Britney.
I brown nose a black bitch named Oprah Winfrey. With the parasites of rich fat ladies.
Britney bought my Benz.
Oprah paid for my Mercedes.
Book of the Month Club, illegitimate kids. Whatever it takes to make it in showbiz. Like it or not, you gotta give us credit.
We keep our hoes in check.
Damn straight.
You said it.
I'm sorry.
We're two peas in a pod. We live off women. If money is the juice, a female is the lemon. Gotta squeeze to get what you need. Two coattailing douchebags fueled by greed.
See, Dr. Phil, I told you you could flow. Damn.
Well, hot damn. I'm pretty pleased with myself, and I think Oprah's gonna be glad I sound so Negro.
What do you have to say about that?
Booyakaw!
How about that?
Do we or do we not have another genius on our hands?
Wow! How about that?
Our CD drops next month. I hope you all pick it up for shizzle.
And we have a Christmas tradition that goes back a long time, since the NBA strike, when the great Karl Malone from the Utah Jazz was doing sports talk radio here in Southern California.
He generously gave of his time around the holidays to talk to the kiddies.
Santa Karl is in the studio with us.
Yep, right here in the ho, ho, ho.
Here comes Santa Karl, here comes Santa Karl for the boys and girls. He's got a sleigh full of toys and goodies and a bag of squirrels.
He do.
He doesn't care who the children are. He loves them all the same.
Yep.
So be glad and don't be sad when Santa screws up your name.
What?
Santa Claus.
Dad there.
Santa Claus. Santa Claus. Santa Claus.
That's me.
Santa Claus. Santa Claus.
Santa's Home Alone, love that song, and love talking to the boys and the girls, especially the girls, mamas. Yeah.
All right, let's start with 10-year-old Alyssa. Hello.
Hello,
Melissa. What's happening? Ho, 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 and Merry Christmas to you, Melissa.
It's Alyssa, by the way, Santa girl.
How are you today?
Fine.
You been a good boy or girl all this year?
Yes.
And have you done all your homework?
Yes.
And have you made up your bed?
Yeah.
Yeah, and have you washed all your squirrels?
She and doesn't have squirrels.
That's good. What could Santa Claus bring for Melissa this year?
I want a Game Boy.
A Gay Boy. Now, hold on one second.
I think she said Game
Boy. I know it is here the 90s, but the 90s is almost over, and time for everybody to cut out that there darn experimentation. Down there, Lord Jesus Christ, don't want nobody touching nobody else.
I think she said Game
Boy. Of the same sex. And you need a regular heterosexual boy right there.
She's 10. Yeah, I think she said Game
and
Boy.
And that's too young to be going to lesbians. You know what I'm saying? And so, anyway. Happy Christmas, and the Gay Boy not coming this year.
What about it?
Perhaps Santa Claus will bring you dolls.
Okay, all right.
There is one more thing I want.
Oh, yes, what's
that?
Backstreet Boys.
You want the I said no gay boys. Now, Santa Claus don't like to repeat himself. Now, get on off that phone and be a good little girl.
Thank you, Alyssa. Merry Christmas
Come
to
on
you.
Now. All right.
I understand.
Then.
You just try to stand up for what you think is right.
That's
there,
right.
All right, let's talk to little 4-year-old Ryan.
Hello there, Brian.
It's Ryan.
Hello, Merrick. Ho, ho, ho. You on the phone with Santa Claus? Speak up, youngster.
Tell me what
Ryan?
Carson Truck.
Carson Shorts.
I think she said, he said
Carson
a truck.
Carson Shorts. Carson Truck?
Some kind of truck, yeah.
A Carson Truck.
Animal Control Fire Truck.
And
fire
a
fire
truck.
No, fire truck. Santa
Fire truck.
Right.
What? Hear what Santa Claus say to you, little boy. If you want fire truck, you don't have to wait till Christmas time. Just get some matches and a big old truck.
No, that's bad advice.
No.
Bad advice.
Santa Claus, don't get no matches, but call 911. And you'll get your fire truck right off the bat. and it'll come right there. Don't have to wait till no Christmas time. And that's a big, red, shiny fire truck.
Right.
And happy Christmas, youngster.
And you would recommend that to all the kids listening today, Santa Carl?
No, not to all the kids, but only kids want a fire truck.
Okay, I got you.
That's good sound advice.
Let's go to Rancho Cucamonga and say good morning to five-year-old Brianna.
Hello there, little Weanna.
Brianna, can you hear us?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're on with Santa. Go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah, what could Santa Carl bring you for this here Christmas time?
A bike.
A what?
And a baby.
A bike?
A bike and a lady. Is that?
And a baby.
Oh, a bike and a baby. Now, hold on. How old is here, Weanna?
She's five.
Five-year-old? But that's too young to have no babies. Because here's the thing. Ovaries don't form up. That's ovary that's in the women.
Yeah.
And that's what make up baby. Yeah. And ovary get all infected with all kind of
dude, she may
things.
Have been a doll. She's like a baby, baby doll.
A baby doll.
Yeah.
Okay. Then, okay, Carmelo gave you a baby doll, but no baby. That's Carmelo think he'd go to jail for that there. That's right. That's a stocking Carmelo don't stuff. Know what I'm saying?
We hear you. What about the bicycle? Can you help her
no,
with
No, that's crazy.
What's a bike?
Kids bike? Get in the traffic, they get hurt. That's no more bicycle.
You don't think kids should be riding
Santa
bikes at
Carl
all?
Santa Carl drive his 16-wheeler truck, and kids always swerving out in bicycle, and Santa Carl always honking, honk, honk on horn. And Santa Carl don't want to see no more bicycle on the road. So.
All right.
Sorry there, little Weanna. But
right. Thank you, Brianna.
Merry yes, Christmas.
Santa Carl can't do nothing for her
there. Let's say good morning to six-year-old Joseph.
Hello.
Hello. This is Joseph's big sister, Jessica. She wants concert tickets, so here's Joe.
Yeah,
hello?
Well, hello.
Hello,
this here's Santa Carl. Ho, ho, ho. Do you believe in Santa Carl, little boy?
Yep.
All right, then. What could Santa Carl...
Sound like Santa Claus.
Santa Carl here. There's no Santa Claus. Santa Claus a Nazi. People don't realize that.
Don't go there with the kids.
Santa Claus is an actual living Nazi.
No,
but
true.
What could Santa Carl...
I want...
Doesn't care.
Yeah, that's right. What do you want, little boy?
I want a Crash Team Beetle game.
A crashed up Buick?
Crashed up Buick.
Well, Santa Carl don't know where your kids get these ideas here, but that's what you want. Santa Carl got a nice new LeSabre. He's going to run right into a wall and give on to you, little boy.
I want.
And thank you so much, and Merry Christmas. All right, then. Happy Christmas to you and that crashed up Buick coming your way.
Bye-bye. Thank you for calling.
Well, I wonder what that had to do with the concert tickets that his sister tipped us off to.
Santa Claus don't know. Santa Claus don't know, but Santa Claus like to talk to that sister there.
I bet you would. Do you feel like you get along pretty well with the kids? Do you feel like you're making a connection, Santa
Claus? Santa Claus do love all the little children, especially them ones that he legally obligated to pay support for.
And that number is increasing all the time.
And that number keep going up.
All right, let's say good morning to 9-year-old Jess.
Oh, hello there, Jessica.
Hello there, Santa Carl.
You're 9-year-old?
Yeah.
All right, and what could Santa Carl bring down your chimney this Christmas time?
I want a Harry Potter book.
Oh, the Larry Potter book. That's a good, that's scary books for the children.
Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets.
And that's a good, right, that there scary magic book and teaching a kid witchcraft and how to cut off heads of squirrels conjure up spirits
Harry
to
Potter.
Kill your enemies and whatnot.
Have you read these, Santa Carl? They're very popular
Santa
with young
Carl,
people.
Kids' books. We're reading the Larry Potter book because Michael Jordan kept beating on Santa Carl. And Santa Carl did is conjure up a spell and kill all kind of animals, sacrifice them to Satan. And
I don't know that this is a proper
guess what happened?
Conversation.
Michael Damn Jordan retired.
Oh, really?
And so Larry Potter book work to kill off enemy.
Which Harry Potter book do you want?
Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets.
Chamber of Secrets. How about that one, Santa Carl? You read that one?
Santa Carl have not. No, Santa Carl not big on reading.
No.
But Santa Carl have heard of that, and Santa Carl will bring that to little girl. And thank little girl. Thanks for calling in today.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, that's the motto for today.
Yeah.
Number one thing is just be good. Don't expect no presents for our kids. And number two, Santa Claus loved that Lou Bega, a little bit of Mambo. And Santa Claus got to go see that at the Jingle Jam because that's good music right there.
Hey, Santa Carl, we appreciate you talking to the kids. Let me just ask you this. Yeah. What happens to you after Christmas time? You have big plans to welcome the year 2000, you and the family in Utah?
Santa Carl do spend time with family in Utah, but Santa Claus on the road, uh-huh. traveling around and playing the basketball right. and knocking the women's up. So
so no real New Year's plans.
No, nothing special for all the right. New Year. Nope, just same old stuff. And a happy Christmas to you boys, too. And Santa Claus want to say Merry Christmas.
All right.
Well, Santa Claus just did. Yeah. So thank you for coming in. It's great to see you. Happy holidays.
Ho, ho, ho to all you all right now at the K-Rock station. You too, Bic.
All right. Thank you.
And if anyone out there can ever figure out what the hell Bob Dylan is talking about, please let us know.
First, though, it's time for Bob Dylan's Theme Time Radio Hour. Good morning, Bob.
Hey, Country Time Lemonade Hour.
Bob does this show on one of the satellites. I don't know which one, but he picks a theme, he plays music, and then he tells stories about the theme.
I pick a song. He's going to put them on one again and tell them stories. He's going to put them together and then, you know, give them colostomies.
What?
Did you say colostomy?
What?
Bob, it's curious to me, although you're a musical legend and you've won tons of Grammys and sold millions of albums and sold out concert tours around the world, how did somebody come to you and say, know that guy over there? We can't understand a word he says? Let's give him a radio show.
He said, Bob, you know about music. It's done. The music goes behind the scenes. But the Grammys made a song and then people hear what you're saying.
Have you ever thought of having an interpreter that could actually tell the rest of us what you're talking about?
Nope.
Okay. What is your what's your theme this week, Bob?
Theme this week is called the old Thanksgiving. Got to spin up a spoonful. Got to spin up a spoonful. Eat. Golf the leftovers. Got to get up food.
I didn't.
I thought I heard something about Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And then I heard fool.
Yeah. The theme this week is food.
Spoon. I'm sorry, spoon. So there's Spoon Man. What else is there?
No. Boom.
Booze.
Booze. No. Boom.
Huh?
Booze.
Boom.
Anyone?
Mood?
Boom.
Tools?
Boomed?
Yeah, it's tools. all those hammer and saw songs.
If I had a hammer.
There you go. All right.
I'm sorry, Bob. We're trying hard. What's the theme?
God damn it, food.
Food.
Oh, food. Okay. Food. All right, Thanksgiving, that makes a lot of sense.
And
okay.
I eat a lot of food. I got a lot of leftovers in the refrigerator. And say, oh, I'm talking about food.
Why is it that you were so much clearer there 1 second ago?
Because I got angry.
Okay. So what kind of songs are you playing? What kind of stories are you telling?
I'm talking about food and talking about putting together. Everybody hears the song. And they just put the story about food. Like this song.
Cherry Pie, right now, I wouldn't see you as a guy who would ever play a record by Warren under any circumstances.
He's masturbating that video.
Oh, what?
Nothing.
Back here at MC.com with
what else you got?
Ava. Hi, Ava. You got the prettiest eye. You're 18?
Almost 19.
You're up in just a little bit, huh?
Yeah.
What size are you?
Yeah.
Okay. I like your smile. Yeah. All right, well, let's go ahead and head out.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
I'm really surprised that Weird Al is on your screen.
Oh, I love you, Al.
All right.
Okay.
And then, this is my favorite, one of my favorite songs of all time. Coming up next.
Chicken noodle soup.
Chicken dinner thing.
Back here at Innocent.com with we got Ava.
Chicken noodle soup.
Chicken noodle soup.
Chicken
noodle soup.
Chicken noodle
soup. Well, I don't think we're doing any of these artists solid by singing on the song so that we can understand nothing.
I'm a musical genius.
You are a musical genius. That's
I'm gonna go to work for his life.
Bob.
Okay, Bob, thank you.
Bob, we gotta go.
We really are out of time, Bob. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
People ask us, Kevin Bean, why do you seem to have no self-respect?
To which we respond, we haven't earned any. Can I at least just say in my defense,
no.
At least I learned shortly after that I was bad on television, and now I don't agree to do anything.
Yeah.
People come to us all the time and say, hey, be on TV, and I always say no, right?
And here's the thing, Bean. You are exactly the same guy on this TV show that you are now on the radio. That's my point. That's what I'm trying to tell you. And I will point out examples along the way how you haven't changed an iota.
But I'm worse on television, is what I'm saying. At least
well,
I
recognize because
that.
You can see you. But yeah, other
you
than
can't
that,
see me on radio.
Other
so.
Than that, same thing, same personality, same guy.
All right, what do you got?
Yeah, here's how the whole thing started. Here's the big intro.
Hi, and welcome to the Channel 9 Adams Family Marathon. I'm Kevin. This is Bean. We do the morning show on 106.7 K Rock. We're hanging out on Thanksgiving Day with chili fries and milkshakes. Seriously, the breakfast of champions, and happy holiday from all of us at K-Rock and Channel 9. You know, what better way to spend your holiday, really, than with the good old Adams family? You're not going to find a family more warm, more loving, more all-American, all-around family than the Adams family.
I have a question. Who's this guy?
I don't know. What, Uncle Fester? I've never seen him before in my life.
Uncle Fester right here. We don't even know who he is. Hey, not only are we going to be showing you classic Adams Family episodes, but we're also going to roam the streets of Los Angeles and of Hollywood, and we're going to find some spooky, ooky people.
Please, no more ooky. Yeah. No more ooky. Not before we've eaten.
I hate us.
No more ooky. Seriously, not before we've eaten.
Kevin, the audience look pissed.
When it opens, Kevin's laughing at himself as he starts to talk.
Well, I
we're
know.
Here. Oh, the whole Adams family. Oh.
I know I'm bad.
They're sitting at a cafe table on Sunset. It looks like, or maybe it was Melrose. And there's people around them and stuff. And hey, who's this guy? Look at this guy over here. You're just pointing at random people. It's as if you had never even seen a TV show. You had no idea how it was supposed to work. Remarkable. Remarkable. And that's a lot of ookie comedy, by the way.
Yeah.
See, because that was one of the lyrics of the intro, of the theme of the Addams Family.
Right.
It was their spooky and their ookie. And Bean loves him some ookie comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's when you go down on the street of Melrose and you're talking to people. You're doing your man on the street interviews.
Yeah.
And you talk to some ladies who apparently have traveled to come to Los Angeles.
Are you guys locals or here visiting?
We're visiting.
Where from?
Orange County.
Oh, that's quite a stretch.
He came all the way from Orange County in one day?
That's right.
Yeah. Aren't you, where are you staying while you're in L.A.? Yeah. Seriously, what time's your flight back? Do you have time for this?
Yeah, okay. We get it. Orange County's close to Los Angeles. We get it. No need to wring the comedy dry out of that any longer at that point.
Dude, if you
I
don't have...
I feel your scorn, and I accept it.
If you don't have anything else...
Well, where are you staying? You're going to fly back? Wow, you came all that way? Whoa, boy, is Orange County close to Los Angeles.
It is impossible to overstate just how bad that sucks.
All right.
Now you're talking to a young lady on Melrose there who's pale, who's quite pale.
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
You two are bronzed gods, by the way, when you start talking to this girl. I've never seen two whiter guys in my life than you guys on this TV show. But Bean seems to think it's hilarious until she pretty much shuts him down with cold, hard logic.
Our pal Zane, how the heck are you?
Very good. How are you?
Good. Now, it's hard to live in Los Angeles and not get a tan. What's your secret? Seriously, how do you do it?
I wear baseball caps. Don't go in the sun.
And Bean's like, oh, yeah, I guess that's how you would not get a tan. Don't go in the sun. He had nothing to follow up with. You just see a fear in his eyes when she just came back with a completely reasonable answer as to why she's not tan.
Well, women hate Bean immediately upon meeting him.
Doesn't help.
Yeah,
so he's
kind of
used to that by now.
Here's a great stretch. This is the guy's talking to a guy from Lebanon who's obviously never heard of the Addams Family. And Kevin, for lack of any material, starts to smack him in the forehead with the microphone.
I do?
Yeah. And then Bean, at the end of this segment, you'll hear, will go into what is quintessentially a Bean moment. Okay?
Bill, we're very excited, and I'm sure you are too, that the Addams Family is back on television.
Addams Family?
Yeah.
Have you heard of the Addams Family?
No.
Where are you from?
I'm from Lebanon.
Well, it's such a big show in Lebanon, though. I don't understand how you could have
missed
it.
Addams Family.
Yeah.
When did you get here?
Like 2 years ago.
What the heck are you doing? Hitting him in the head with a microphone?
I don't know. Yeah.
It's an American thing. It means we like you. When you do this in America, it means we like you.
Thank you.
Addams Family is a show. It's a historical kind of a public broadcasting system show about our second president of the United States. Are you familiar with John Addams?
Yeah.
You vote for him?
I can't vote.
Oh, you can't vote.
Would you have voted for John Adams, though?
Yeah.
He's a good man. Yeah, he's a good man.
He's good.
Bean rocking the President Adams comedy.
Yeah.
President Adams.
They still got it.
Yeah, well.
Nice. Shut up. Just shut up. Get him off the air, please. Bean, shut up.
Adams family is not President Adams.
See, because...
Lisa, do you remember this? Do you remember when we did this?
I don't. I think I blacked out.
I think I blacked out.
Here you guys are looking for more victims on the street.
Hey, it's getting spooky. It's getting nooky out here.
We're Kevin and Bean. We're just wandering the streets of Hollywood trying to find some weird people. So come with us, won't you?
It's getting spooky. It's getting ooky out here. Always makes my foot loose. Holy crap.
I just threw up.
Then you guys decide you need to start actually writing some material. You had to come up with a bit. So tail end of the show, you guys are in search of Uncle Fester. You're running up and down Melrose trying to find Uncle Fester.
Really?
Yes.
Like you're shocked at your own performance.
Why would we do that?
Bean, I think I just saw Uncle Fester. Let's go. You guys are like running the cameras following you like you're doing some documentary trying to in search of Uncle Fester.
Yeah.
In pursuit of Uncle Fester now. I swear to God it was him. We just saw him a minute ago.
Nice acting, by the way. And so when this gag comes to its culmination, to its climax,
all of Los Angeles laughs.
What it is you've gone to a Goodwrench auto shop, and they've got a cardboard cutout of Mr. Goodwrench in front of the garage, and he's bald.
Yeah,
much like the character Uncle Fester was bald.
No way.
And so the payoff is interview the cardboard cutout of Mr. Goodwrench.
No, we don't.
In front of the Goodyear tire shop.
Do you remember that, Bean?
I don't.
I'm pretty sure that was Mark and Brian.
Please listen to the interview. You guys talking to the cardboard standee cutout of Mr. Goodwrench.
How you doing, sir? Good, good. You're a big Adams Family fan, are you? Uh-huh. What's your favorite part about the show? Anyone ever tell you look just like Uncle Fester?
You seem a little stiff. Are you having problems today?
You seem a little stiff, see, because he's a cardboard cutout.
Now you know, Ralph, why Channel 9 puts on so much news.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You said forget it. We're not doing this anymore.
Kevin and Bean, masters of television.
Armenian comedian, you're with us at least.
You guys are
very proud that in the Hollywood Walk of Fame, there are the stars, and as people come from out of town, they walk the sidewalks, and they get all excited about their favorite movie stars, TV stars, music stars, Ryan Seacrest.
He got a star, but his frosted tips didn't, right?
Morning, Mike. How are you?
Hi, everybody.
Mike took the bullet yesterday and went down. You cruised on by the Ryan Seacrest star of the Hollywood Walk of Fame ceremony that was happening?
Sure did. Sure did. And very appropriate that it was in West Hollywood.
Now, is it true? First of all, I have two things before we find out your observations. One is I heard on Access Hollywood yesterday, and I swear to God this is what they said. I haven't independently researched it. Robert Redford doesn't have a star in the Hollywood Walk of Fame. No star for Julia Roberts. No star for George Clooney.
Wow.
However, Ryan Seacrest now has a star on the sidewalk.
Right where he got his star was right next to Tony Curtis, Frank Sinatra.
Oh, people we've heard of that actually had careers?
Kermit the Frog, Groucho Marx, Greta Garbo. These are the people Ryan Seacrest was wedged between.
You're kidding.
Wow. Is that not an atrocity?
Yes, it's an atrocity. And again, I want people to realize that just because we are competing with him, we don't think we should be there either.
Right.
Like the Kevin and Bean, we don't deserve a star there either because that's for superstar actors and actresses. It's not for little DJs.
Tony Curtis and Groucho Marx and the kinds of people and the way Julia Roberts and George Clooney, for God's sake.
The way I look at it, that is one of the biggest tourist attractions in all of Los Angeles. So when people are coming from all around the world to come to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, they should see people that they all recognize.
Exactly. And if they don't, if they start filling it up with the Ryans of the world, then people are just going to go, well, this is nothing. There's nobody here I recognize.
I heard that Chris, the fired apprentice from last week, is getting a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
It's true.
Becomes worthless.
And number two was, is it true that there were a lot of people down there to see the presentation?
Psycho Mike's estimate would be about 1,000 people.
Psycho Mike's estimate would be that?
Yes.
Did you ask him? That's what he said?
I had a talk with him in the other studio before I came in.
That's a huge turnout. It seems to me.
I was worried that I was going to get down there. It wasn't going to be enough people to talk to.
Right.
And it was a major going on.
Okay.
So it was a big deal. And it really bugged me because, like, I've always wanted to be in show. I didn't really know what I wanted to do, but I've always wanted to be in show business. And I've always wanted to be in comedy. And just a guy who just doesn't have a modicum of talent to go up there and everybody's patting him on the back and giving him this type of acclaim really got under my skin. But, you know, I certainly – there were plenty of people there that loved him, and I got to talk to a lot of them. What has Ryan Seacrest done that's so special that he deserves a star in the Hollywood Walk of Fame?
And he makes American Idol to me.
So it's not the talent of the singers or the performances, it's the host.
For me, yes. Well, he's very talented.
Okay, no, you said he's very talented. What are some of the things he's done to exhibit talent?
Just the way that he holds himself on television, I think, is really good. So he knows what he's talking about. He's really professional.
You think he's cute?
Oh, yeah.
Who's better looking, him or me? Seriously.
Ryan, definitely.
Go f*** yourself.
Sorry.
Now, from a gay man's point of view, do you find him attractive?
Yeah, I do. I like the boy next door type.
Gay men tend to have a little bit more of an astute gay radar. What does yours indicate when you're around Ryan?
I don't think he's gay.
You don't think so?
I just don't get that from him. I think he's just a straight guy who's really into his looks.
Are you a big Ryan Seacrest fan?
Yes.
What makes you such a big fan of him?
He's a wonderful host.
And you think he makes the show? You think he actually contributes to the show's success?
Yes.
What are some of your other favorite television shows?
Joan of Arcadia, the George Lopez show.
You have fantastic taste in television.
Thank you.
What are you doing here?
I'm here to see Ryan get a star, of course.
What are some things he does as the host of American Idol that makes him so special?
Well, I like that he's so genuine. I think that's the biggest thing, that he's just a real person.
Yeah, because when I think Ryan Seacrest, the first thing that comes into my mind is genuine.
I don't know him, but...
I do. He's a terrible man. And it's only fitting that it's on Hitler's birthday that he gets his star here on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Gosh, that's horrible.
What are you doing out here honoring Seacrest?
I love him. I just want to give him a bubble bath.
Do you think this is deserved, him getting a star here?
I think he deserves this because he's worked his way up.
What do you like about Ryan? What personally draws you to him? What makes you a fan?
His fresh face, his ability to talk.
Excuse me, I think you just said his ability to talk.
He can dress well.
He does. Yeah, the guy dresses well. For a homo. Are you a big Ryan fan?
Ryan actually raises money for the hospital that these kids are patients at.
Do these children stay at the psychiatric ward of the hospital because they are Ryan Seacrest fans? Are you a big Ryan Seacrest fan?
Yes, I am.
Watch American Idol every week?
Every week.
What does Ryan do that makes you such a big fan of him?
He's very likable. He's a very friendly person.
He's very friendly. Have you ever met him in person?
No, it's the first time I've ever seen him.
So you're assuming he's a nice guy and that he's friendly?
Well, he appears very friendly on TV, yeah.
Are you heterosexual?
Straight. I'm very straight.
You still proudly admit that you're a Ryan Seacrest fan, huh?
Yeah.
All right, good for you, man. You a big Ryan fan?
I'm impressed with him, yeah. I think he does a very good job.
Do a very good job at what?
At emceeing.
Emceeing American Idol?
Yes.
Do you think he really contributes a lot to the success of the show, or is that just mostly the talent that they showcase?
Both. Yes, I do. I think he does.
If someone else were to host that show, say Jimmy Kimmel, would you still be such a big fan of American Idol?
No, I would not.
And why is that?
Because I think Ryan really makes it.
If someone sliced up his face with like a razor blade and he's really ugly, would you still like him just as much?
Yes, I would.
Do you listen to him on the radio?
Yes.
And what do you think?
He's very good.
He's the best broadcaster in Los Angeles, right?
Yes.
Oh, easily.
Mm-hmm.
Much better than, say, Kevin and Bean?
Yeah.
Oh, easily, right?
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the bits he does on the radio that you really like?
Well, you know, he introduced the people who made the top 40. I like how he does that.
Yeah, because that takes a lot of talent. You know, it takes an exceptional person to do that, right?
Yes.
Are you on any medication today?
No.
Have you been drinking?
No.
Has anybody ever used the word mongoloid or retard around you?
No.
Thanks a lot, dude.
All right.
Oh, God.
Mike.
Yes. Just because Ryan's retarded doesn't mean all of his fans are.
I'm just checking.
Or does it?
He's just checking, that's all.
So he got that for his radio work? Because not one person there mentioned his radio work.
Listen to me. He got the star on the Walk of Fame for his radio work, and it had nothing to do with American Idol.
Uh-huh. That's so funny.
So
no radio fans there, really.
You people, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever with that one.
We're out.
It seemed like a surreal, like a parallel universe.
Well, that was a job well done. Thank you.
Thank you.
With the most hilarious and timely Talladega Nights comedy on the radio.
All right, we'll see you later, Rick and Bobby.
Hey everybody, this is Ricky Bobby. You know, when Kevin and Bean asked me to be a part of this Christmas CD, I said, hell no. But then, when they told me it was for charity, I said, no again. Anyway, one big K-Rock endorsement deal later, and here I am. Now, those of you that follow NASCAR already know that Christmas is my favorite holiday, and that baby Jesus is my favorite of all the Jesuses. So I thought, what I'd like to do is take this opportunity to send the little baby Jesus a special Ricky Bobby birthday wish. And it goes a little something like this. Dear baby Jesus, so small and in your little infant manger, just cooing and making noises because you don't know how to talk, but still being holy and beautiful and cherubic. and your skin and so fresh and not sunburned yet, and you smell like a baby does, which is usually like baby powder or some sort of liniments and oils and myrrh, because you're holy, and that's what the wise men brought you. They brought you myrrh and incense and so like a flashlight or something. I can't remember how it goes. But dear little baby Jesus, happy birthday to you on this glorious day. I mean, it's a great day. It's your birthday. Hey, it's your birthday. You probably want to go to Vegas and party with your buddies. But you're just a baby. You can't drive a car. But you could hire a limo service or maybe get a cheap flight on Southwest. They leave like every half hour. Get a suite at the Mirage. You know, party down with some other your baby friends. I don't know. You do whatever you want to do. It's your birthday. So celebrate it. And I want the people out there to celebrate it and think about you, the little baby, who looks over us all and drools. Amen.
Bean doesn't have any real human friends.
So I write to people on TV instead. What's wrong with that?
We've been on the air for quite some time, and people cannot tell the difference between Bean and myself. But in general, if what we're describing is way out, is like weird to the max.
Nerdy.
Strange.
Not so much from you, Lisa May.
old lady-ish.
Yeah.
Or young girlish.
They don't need my help. Is that what you mean?
That equals Bean.
Bean or is retarded paperboy-ish.
So we heard not too long ago that one of his favorite R&B singers, Luther Vandross, was in the hospital. And the Bean sent him a get-well card. Now, that's the kind of a thing that he doesn't do really for his friends, quote-unquote. But he finds random celebrities that he kind of likes, and then he assumes that there's kind of a personal relationship right there, and he sends them a personal get-well card.
No, that's not true. Look, there is such thing as a fan-artist relationship that doesn't pretend to be anything more than that, and I'm telling you that you can mock me if you want, but you have to mock tens of thousands of others who also sent cards to Luther Vandross when he went into the hospital, because you know you guys are the guys who unlike me, who believe in the karma and the goodwill that's out there and the prayers and the wishes. I mean, that really for some people really helps them and picks them up when they see that there's a lot of love out there hoping that they'll get better.
But Bean, here's the difference is that, and we've tried to make this difference before,
first of all, he's in a coma. I don't think he's reading your note.
But
first
he's out of the coma now and he can sit up and he can talk.
The difference is that everybody you work with and everybody that you're semi-close to on a personal basis, you don't treat them like that. You drive them batty.
10:01, you don't want to talk to any of us. You're insanely upset if you have to have a phone conversation with any of us after 10:01.
Right, so that's how you treat us, and then you send a get-well card
to
and
somebody you don't know.
And the latest, Roger Ebert, who's the film critic.
That's right. That's right. I forgot about that.
What was wrong with him that you had to send him a get-well card?
He was too fat.
Too fat?
No. Yeah. You're talking about Pulitzer Prize-winning film critic Roger Ebert? That's who we're discussing?
Don't care how many awards he's won.
You know that guy that does a thing on Sunday with the movies.
He has thyroid cancer, and he mentioned it on his show. And I thought, you know what? Roger Ebert has given a lot to me.
I can give
a little bit back.
Sorry.
It cost me 37 cents
Bean
for the stamp.
Sent him a get-well card.
And I'm sure many other fans will as well because
we
like him.
All assume they have some sort of relationship with him. And they're all wrong.
All right. Now, Bean, just for a second, I want you to be quiet. I'll be quiet. Ralph, I want your theory. You said you thought about it a lot this weekend. What's the?
Yeah, I think it's some sort of misplaced arrogance that there's some sort of relationship with a celebrity, that you have some sort of connection with that celebrity above and beyond everyone else.
Okay.
There's some attachment to them above and beyond.
That doesn't even make sense to me because I'm not expecting anything in return for it.
No, it's the gesture. You making some contact to that person somehow puts you in some sort of relationship with that person.
And I'll clarify that for you because I'll tell you what that relationship is. It's the relationship of a fan who just wants to extend good wishes.
Who's just spooky.
First of all,
a spooky fan and a scared celebrity. That's
here's
what it
is. The weird thing. He's not an artist. He doesn't create movies or create art. He's not a great painter. He doesn't write great novels.
That didn't seem to bother you when we were talking about Luther Vandross, who is a great
recording
artist.
At least I could see that he's an artist. But Roger Ebert is a guy who watches other people's art and then gives you his opinion
on it.
Gives
you his
popcorn.
Thumb, really.
Yeah, he gives you a thumb.
But if you don't think that, if you don't think there's any skill involved in crafting a movie review the way he does, then you probably never watched his show or read him in print.
But it's
because
just
the
an
guy
opinion,
is
no matter
very
how,
good.
How well it's written, it's just an opinion. Everybody's got one.
But let me ask you this: when we have a guy on, you know, like a, let's say Bill Maher is an example, he's just given his opinions on what other people are doing in the news, but we respect him because we think he's got
funny.
Something on the ball
because he's got talent. He's right. funny.
Here's my
and Roger Ebert has talent. Maybe he isn't funny, but he's got a good eye.
He can write
for,
an article
for critical thinking.
Here's my theory. Bean doesn't really like friends. He's not a friend guy.
He's not.
He doesn't have people over ever.
Right.
Right.
And so to kind of take that place in his life.
Because there's this empty space.
He sends cards to people that there's no threat of them responding
up.
And being a friend and stuff
right.
like that. So he assumes a friendship just because he needs friends of people that could never possibly get back to him. So he keeps that big wall of distance in front of him. And he does stuff for people he doesn't know, like you and I do for people we do know.
Color me impressed, Kevin. That's very clever.
What do you think?
I think that's a really...
I think that holds water.
Bean?
It's a friendship at his convenience.
Yes.
It doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Oh,
what's
please. At least it makes sense.
Well, I understand the words that you're saying, but I don't think the theory holds water.
I think you should win a Pulitzer Prize for
Thank
that.
You.
Dear Bean, this email begins from Josh. I never thought this would happen to me, but I actually agree with you. Ebert is the man.
Oh.
He saved me quite a bit of money over the years on films that I would have hated and recommended some gems that I would have passed on. As film critics go, the crop gets no creamier, which by the way, I love. Yeah. I agree that you probably have more time on your hands than any one person should, but so do I for writing this email to you. But I thought it was a kind gesture
right.
that you sent Roger a card.
Let me try a scientific experiment.
Okay.
Bean, look at your penis. What happens?
Uptown Girls is kind of a
What's
mess
happening?
Organization.
What's happening?
Subplots
movement?
Chasing each other
Are you getting movement? Listen to what Roger's talking about. That's all.
Are two charming and funny performances.
Too charming, and he's got that
Murphy
side of his mouth thing because he's.
They connect in a way that's oddly convincing as if somehow
oh
they're
God,
both the same age and size.
Wow.
And
he's giving Uptown
he
Girls
called,
a thumbs
he
up.
Is, yeah. He called two actresses charming. That is genius. That is a genius piece of writing right there.
Murphy is the real thing.
Dude. He was saying the movie was bad and didn't work at all, but he liked the performances
dude,
by those two
dude,
actors.
What are you doing?
Wow, the fact that he could say the movie wasn't good, but the performances were strong? He is a genius. You're right. I'm sorry. Who could come up with that kind of insight? He's brilliant.
You know, there is...
He's invented something brilliant.
There is some reason why he has been a famous and popular film critic for a long time. He obviously
he has a TV show.
And why do you think he has a TV show? Because he's good at what he does.
Because the people that own his newspaper also own a syndication company, Tribune Broadcasting, and they said
right.
we could sell advertising time if we talked about movies for a half an
but
hour.
There are, but Bean, there are a lot of people who are good at what they do that we don't have a personal relationship with. Like, I would never consider, let's say, you know, I love Eminem. If Eminem got sick, I love Eminem. I think he's one of the best rappers. He is the best rapper in my lifetime. I love him. If he got sick, it wouldn't cross my mind to send him a get well card because I don't have that kind of relationship with him. And I've met him, what, twice now. Still, I don't have that kind of relationship.
Well, I think you're trying to build a relationship where I'm not, or not understanding that I'm comfortable with the relationship of just a fan who's just wishing him goodwill. That's all. There's nothing more to it than that, and it takes
Creepy.
Me 1 minute to fill out a card and drop it in the mail to
okay.
the Chicago Sun-Times.
Okay.
And you know, hopefully makes him feel a little better on the other end. That's
Here's
all.
The key.
Maybe he's got friends and family that make him feel better.
I'm sure he does.
Here's
I'm
the
not
key.
I'm not pretending to replace that.
Wait.
Like unlikely casting in Eminem's 8 Mile.
Ooh!
He mentioned Eminem's 8 Mile.
Genius!
Are you semi-hard? No, here's the key, is that you don't treat anyone like that up to the point where you don't know them. If you treated everyone the same, it would make sense to us. He's the crazy guy that sends get-well cards to everybody he knows. That logically would make sense to us. But you're not that guy. You have to have a certain amount of... You've never met them and don't know them before
Distance.
You'll send them a card.
I was thinking, who would the biggest influence of an artist or performer in my life that if I ever got sick, I would send a card to?
Right.
And I was thinking, Frank Sinatra. Nobody was a bigger Frank Sinatra fan than me. I mean, I've got posters of him in my walls. I mean, a huge Sinatra fan. Had a big impact on me my whole life. When he got sick, it didn't even dawn on me to send him a card.
So, in other words, Frank died not knowing that you cared. That's basically what you're saying.
I think
Maybe
he knew.
Maybe if you'd have taken a little
I
bit of effort, he would have realized you were out there and you cared.
I think he knew. I think what he didn't do is, who the hell is this sending me a card? He didn't go through that.
But he's
I didn't bother him that week.
He's not a guy who listens to records and goes, thumbs up.
In her previous movie,
like
Just
song.
Married, was a real stinker, but here, her comic talent transforms the predictable material.
Just Married was a stinker. What insight?
Stinker.
No one could have saw that.
He used the word stinker.
Well, he did. It was
Sam Rubin is a famous entertainment reporter, too. I don't think he's any good.
I famous don't think he's doesn't any good equal either. Good. I didn't say it did, by the way. I never said
thumbs
it.
Thumbs down to Bean Sending Get Well Cards to Roger Ebert.
Good news, people. Couldn't be better news. A cure for AIDS.
Armenian comedian.
Now, Lightning is telling us, as a result of spending 10 days with you in close quarters on the Freak Bus trip to Bethlehem, that you guys had the opportunity to talk about a lot of things.
Yeah.
Is it true that you, Armenian comedian, have the cure for cancer and the cure for AIDS?
Yes.
Isn't this the type of information that would be helpful to a great number of people?
I told you.
Does it involve...
I just want to be as simple as that. I want to be the president of the United States.
I can guarantee that won't happen.
Armenian comedian, you know you weren't born in the United States, so you can't be president.
Yeah, well, I'm citizen.
But right. the question, Armenian comedian, is if you have the cure for AIDS, shouldn't you maybe give it up?
Give it up what?
You should tell people so that they can stop people from dying of AIDS.
I can tell.
Okay. Why don't you tell us then? What is the cure for AIDS and for cancer?
Okay, you see, you have to get the special herbs.
God. Herbs, right?
Yeah.
And?
Peels and things to boil and drink it with. And I can't tell you the names right now.
Right.
I have it in my book.
So you do have it written down somewhere.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. It'd be a shame if he had the cure and then lost it.
What book do you have it written down in?
My own diary.
Oh, your diary.
Your diary, right.
So in your diary, you have the answer to AIDS.
Huh?
The cure for AIDS.
Right.
And it's a herb.
Yes.
So what do you do with this food? Do you eat it? Do you rub it on you? Do you bathe in it? What?
All of them.
You just rub it all over
you? There are things that you have to swallow like a pill. There are things that you have to take it to really do a plunger, a Drano system pill that it takes all your system out from, you know, you can't just do... It's like a car. You are a car. Your body is like the car of your soul, okay?
Right.
So you have to take care of like a 3,000 miles car oil change.
Right.
Whatever, lube.
Sure, lube.
You have to do these things with this herb.
How did you discover this, Armenian comedian?
Because I'm a hairdresser. I work with human beings.
Oh, so that's how you discovered the cure to AIDS?
And plus, I'm also a healer since I'm 12 years old with my own hands. I cure people with pressure and massage and cracked ankle, stiff neck, backache, name it.
And let's not discount your Mr. Clown, too, and a hell of a balloon animal maker.
All right, listen, Armenian comedian, we got to kind of run. If you could take us out with a joke.
Do you have one?
Yeah.
Can you do the barbershop one, though?
Barbershop? Okay, sure. Can you say this is the highest request of all times, Lightning?
Absolutely.
This is your biggest joke.
This is one of our faves.
All right, we're ready to laugh.
All right. This is a true story, but it sounds like what do you call that, Lightning?
A true story that's also a what?
Lightning.
Hey, Armenian comedian.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Can I speak to Lightning?
No, tell the joke.
Lightning, could you remind me what was the
name of the story?
You.
He forgot what it was.
You know the joke I'm talking about, right? That you said on the CB about the barbershop?
All right. Here's the Armenian comedian.
Long time ago, one of the brothers of mine, Armenian magician, okay? His name was Mardirosyan, okay? In 1945, in Middle East Syria, Damascus, Aleppo. It's a little village, Aleppo. He was a magician worldwide, okay? So he had to go to Paris, France, to get his magician trick.
Now, this doesn't sound like a joke. We need a joke.
Okay, so he went to his friend barbershop, right, to get a haircut. And then the barber was so busy, he had already 20 people in line. In the barber, 20 people getting haircuts. So he says, fit me in. The barber says, I can't fit you in. He says, no problem, I take care of this. So what he did is take off his head, put it on the counter, and he says, I come and pick it up later. And guess what? Everybody in the barber shop scared shit, running out of that barber shop. And guess what? The barber says, come on down, now it's your turn, sit down, get a haircut. And he put the head back on his shoulder. This is a true story.
Check this out. Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story. We could not be more delighted to welcome back to the program the very fine actor John C. Reilly. He is Dewey Cox himself. Good morning, Mr. Reilly.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us. You're Dewey Cox.
Yes, I am. I am Cox.
Yes, you are. John, of course, you would know from Talladega Nights, the Ballad of Ricky Bobby. He was Cal Naughton Jr., Shake and Bake. That was him.
Yep. That's right.
And
that's right.
You're starring in this one. And, of course, it's done by, you know, Judd Apatow and Jake Kasdan, who did Knocked Up and Superbad, and in that vein. I do have to say one thing, though, John. I've seen it. This is Kevin speaking. I saw the movie. And I originally watched the commercial and thought, well, that looks good, but not great.
You thought the trailer sucked. Go ahead and say it.
I was not as excited by the trailer as I thought, but then I had the chance to go see it. I thought, these are the guys that did Knocked Up and Superbad.
Right.
And I went in, and it was fantastic. It was like 10 times better than the trailer. I hope they changed the trailer.
Yeah, well, you know, trailers are an imperfect science.
Yeah.
They're always trying to cast a wide net with those, and that's the case with this one. The movie is... It's a lot funnier once you are able to sort of get the context of the whole thing and hear some of the cool music we did. And
the story of Dewey Cox, who is just trying to make it in showbiz, and he's got a lot of people that are talking out against him.
You think we don't know what you're talking about when you say, take my hand?
What do you mean? It's about holding hands.
You watch your mouth.
You know who's got hands? The devil. And he uses them for holding.
Yeah, John, that's early on. I play myself at the age of 14 in that scene. So.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I play Dewey from 14 to 72. So I'm really hoping to go for the gold this year in the award season.
Now, now when you started talking about doing this movie, was there some talk about, you know, can you sing? Can we do original songs? Should we lip sync? Was there that kind of conversation going on?
Well, we had Jake Kasdan came up with the idea. You know, he decided he'd seen one too many biopics, and he wanted to have some fun and make a comedy out of one of these musical biopics. And he contacted Judd Apatow, and Judd immediately took to the idea. And he had just worked with me on Talladega Nights, and said, I got the guy. And they told me the idea. I thought it was really funny. But then, like you say, you know, the movies, the whole thing is music. And so we had about 6 months to come up with 40 original songs that would be funny and would be listenable and good songs. So, I mean, that's more than some musicians record in their entire lives. So
that's true.
But when we pulled it off, we had a lot of help. We had this great guy, Mike Andrews, who did music for Donnie Darko, and he's worked with Jake a bunch before, and we had a bunch of great songwriters and musicians.
And you've been singing forever in your career. I mean, you got a lot of stage work and stuff.
Since I was a little kid, and then you know, I was in Chicago, the movie, you know, sang in that, and Prairie Home Companion. Even Boogie Nights, I wrote Feel the Heat.
Wow.
So,
wow. You know that?
Didn't realize that.
I get royalty checks for Feel the Heat.
Let me ask you, if you're just joining us, by the way, the great actor John C. Reilly is on the phone right now. We're talking about Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story. Let me ask you about a couple of other people in the movies and just get in the movie and get some quick thoughts. The beautiful Jenna Fischer from The Office.
For all those guys out there who are into Jenna on The Office,
just
be prepared for an explosion of hotness
in
Walk Hard. She plays my second wife, my backup singer, Darlene Madison, who's very committed to the Lord and also has a lot of suppressed sexuality, which needs to come out. And when she meets Dewey, there's a tortuous courtship.
And there's a lot of lingerie, too, by the way.
Yeah, lots of lingerie, lots of sex.
That's part of the fun of this movie is they take a look through your whole entire life, and you have a lot of wives and 7,500 kids, and you run into the Beatles and Elvis. I mean, they take you through the whole thing.
Yeah, we got Jack White from the White Stripes to play Elvis. We got Jack Black from Tenacious D to play Paul McCartney.
Yep.
So, yeah, we're definitely the only movie this Christmas with Jack Black and Jack White in it.
And, by the way, Eddie Vedder, who turns in a very, very energetic performance.
Yeah,
he
inducts Dewey Cox into the Hall of Fame, the Lifetime Achievement Awards.
You go, I see that's Eddie Vedder, but he doesn't talk like that. He really is amazing in this movie.
John, yeah, we had a lot of really funny people in the movie, from everyone from like Tim Meadows and Chris Parnell and Matt Besser. We got people from Saturday Night Live, Upright Citizens Brigade, The Groundlings. You know.
I have one more clip, and it's of Tim Meadows. And does he play your manager? Who does he play?
No, he plays my drummer, Sam, who unwittingly gets me involved in every drug known to man.
And this is a scene where he's trying some stuff out, and he's trying his best to keep you, Dewey Cox, out of it.
What are y'all doing in here?
We're smoking reefer, and you don't want no part of this shit.
You're smoking reefers?
Come on, Dewey. Join the party.
No, Dewey. You don't want this. Get out of here.
You know what? I don't want no hangover. I can't get no hangover.
It doesn't give you a hangover.
I don't know. I don't want to overdose on it.
You can't OD on it.
It's not going to make me want to have sex, is it?
It makes sex even better.
Hmm.
You don't want it.
I think I kind of want it.
John, I'm sure...
It doesn't make a very convincing argument for why I should try
not at all.
Every time you open the door, he's doing something else and telling you that you don't want any of this.
He's always in a bathroom. He's always telling me, you don't want no part of this.
John, I have a feeling with as long as you've been in the business that there have been times where you've had to promote movies that you weren't 100% sold on, but it sounds like this is one that is a blast and you recommend it highly.
Is like such a labor of love and such a blast to make that I'm just excited for people to like get out and have a good time with this movie. We between the music and all the really funny people in it, this is really something special. We really made an original bizarre little movie here.
I agree. I loved it. Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story, and it is fantastic.
I'm excited.
Just in time for the moment when you're home from vacation from college or high school and you're just getting sick of your family.
Exactly.
And you want to go out and escape, we're providing safe haven.
Beautiful. John, you're a terrific actor, man. We really enjoyed talking to you on the Kevin and Bean Show this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Thanks, take care.
Bye now. And I know what you're thinking. Look, Kevin and Bean, I know what Christmas movies I like, but what about your TV and movie reviewer? What about LaQuisha?
Hey, everybody. You know how we have LaQuisha on our show and she likes to review the reality TV shows?
Sure.
Well, we've got her on the line right now and she's ready to review a Christmas classic. Hello, LaQuisha.
Hello, Kevin and Bean. Merry Christmas.
To you, too.
Happy Kwanzaa to you, LaQuisha.
I'm not celebrating no Kwanzaa.
Oh, I thought that was...
I'm celebrating Christmas.
Okay. All right. My bad. I'm sorry.
I was flipping around the TV, cause, as I want to do, you know, because I love watching the television.
You do.
And I came across that show, The Grinch Who Stole Christmas. You know that little show?
Yeah, it's a classic. They show it every year.
Yeah, a little cartoon show.
Right.
So I'm watching it for the first time in a long time, and I said, damn, there's some things wrong with this show.
That's a perfect Christmas show. They show it every year. What could be wrong with
it? No, it isn't. I'll tell you something. All the little Who's down in Whoville, they are celebrating Christmas and getting ready and stuff. And the one person who doesn't want Christmas to come is the Grinch, right?
Right.
That's right.
Every Who down in Whoville liked Christmas a lot. But the Grinch, who lived just north of Whoville, did not.
Mm-hmm. You know why the Grinch is living outside the city limits?
Yeah, but he doesn't like people.
No, because he's the only colored person in the whole neighborhood.
Oh, LaQuisha, are you talking about?
All the little Who's are all pink and fuzzy and whatnot, and the Grinch, he's got some color. He's green, so he can't live with everybody else. They put him in the slums.
Oh, LaQuisha.
Oh, he's got to be the bad one because he's colored. That's why.
No one is saying that, LaQuisha. That's crazy.
That's exactly what they're saying.
Oh, you're missing the whole point.
I think you're missing the whole point. Mm-hmm. And then the Grinch don't like Christmas because of all the presents and whatnot that the Who's play with.
Right.
And they make a lot of noise and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Like this.
And they play noisy games like Zuzitha Kaze.
What the hell's that, Zuzitha Kaze?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know what that
is. What the hell he talking about?
Well, it's based on the popular Dr. Seuss children's book, and he was kind of famous for just making up crazy words that sounded funny. That's all that's it.
Job to have for a grown man making up words? Just shut up, Dr. Seuss. Well, anyway, he goes and takes all the toys and whatnot from the Who's, right?
Right.
He breaks into their homes and steals their Christmas. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not a secret subliminal racist message.
Oh, come on, LaQuisha.
Oh, the colored Who goes into people's homes and steal their gifts.
That is not what it's about at all. You're missing the whole point.
Well, it turns out, even though they have no toys to play with and no food and whatnot, the people of Whoville are still happy about Christmas and stuff. And the Grinch, he changes his mind and learns the real meaning of Christmas.
That's right. That's right, LaQuisha. That's a beautiful message that the spirit of Christmas is that it's not about the presents you get. It's about the being together with your friends and family for the holiday.
Yeah, and this is what happens to him when he discovers that.
And what happened then? Well, in Whoville, they say that the Grinch's small heart grew three sizes that day.
Oh, like that's a good thing?
His heart grew bigger.
I had a cousin who had a large heart. My cousin, Kliniqua, and she had to go to the hospital because her heart got enlarged.
No, but his heart was so tiny to begin with.
That's a lie to say your heart gets big, that that's a good thing for Christmas, because she had happened to her in the holidays,
LaQuisha,
and she missed out on all the holidays being in the hospital.
LaQuisha, who hurt you?
I'm just saying this show is not right for Christmas time. And then the Grinch, who is colored again, if I remind you, he learns a special lesson. They invite him to come and sit down and carve the rare who beast or whatever they're cooking, and everybody has a good time. Mm-hmm. Like he steals their stuff, and they're just going to welcome in on in. Oh, sit down. Have yourself a meal. Try that in my neighborhood. You get cut.
Well, no one wants that.
No, but it's the spirit of Christmas. They're saying, we understand what you're going through. You mm-hmm. understand what we're going through. Let's all get together and hold hands and have a meal.
Yeah, I know. That's the lesson we're all supposed to
right.
learn. And here's the little lesson everyone gets told at the end of the show.
Christmas Day is in our grasp, so long as we have hands to clasp. Christmas Day will always be just as long as we have we. Welcome Christmas while we stand heart to heart and hand in hand.
Aw. Aw.
I gotta go. I got something in my eye.
Aw, see?
Oh, LaQuisha.
I gotta go now. I gotta get off the phone.
Merry Christmas, LaQuisha.
Oh, Merry Christmas.
Now that K-Fed is the world's biggest rapper and has the most successful career, it's hard to remember back when he was first getting started.
What is it about Kevin that makes you love him?
He's so simple.
Kevin Federline, one of the few appearances on his concert tour for the new CD called Playing With Fire that was not canceled due to poor ticket sales, was Wednesday night in Los Angeles, ladies and gentlemen, on the Sunset Strip. K-Rock was there.
Who was happier than everybody that works on this show? They were talking about it for a couple of weeks, I think, about how excited you guys were. Omar is here, Dave the King of Mexico, and Psycho Mike. You guys have been looking forward to that show for ever since it was announced.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we were getting bummed because we were, you know, hearing that all the shows were canceled. We're like, oh man, this one can't be canceled. You know, we're all like, oh.
I checked every day to make sure it wasn't canceled.
King, you know? What did Ralph tell us? That Anaheim sold like 40 tickets or something like that before they finally pulled
tickets,
the plug at it?
Yeah.
38?
Wow. 38, yeah.
And why L.A.? Why was L.A. able to go on?
I think because Kevin fancies himself as an L.A. guy and has a lot of his home base in L.A. and Malibu and whatnot. And I think he thought that regardless of what happens as far as ticket sales, he's got to power through with this one.
So it wasn't up to him? I mean, you'd think it wouldn't be up to him.
It's
you'd think the venue would cancel. Maybe just talked him into keeping it.
I know. Then you got to keep in mind it was Wednesday. Nobody really had work on Thursday or, you know, go to school or whatever. So he probably did have a little higher ticket sales that day.
It was the night before Thanksgiving. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you guys go to the show and you start interviewing people.
Yeah.
Tell us about the first guy.
Well, there's a valet guy. Mm-hmm. You know, we're standing out waiting for people to start coming in. And I've been to shows at the House of Blues. Those guys are usually swamped.
Running.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well.
You're a valet here at the Kevin Federline show?
Yeah.
You busy tonight?
Not really busy.
Not so much with the cars.
Yeah. No, and the people.
That's so awesome.
Yeah. Now, you'd think we were excited to come to this show. You thought we went out of our way
to see
a train wreck.
You guys were talking for weeks and weeks and weeks about what a train wreck it was going to be, how excited you were.
We didn't exactly go to the drastic measures of these people.
Where'd you come from tonight to see Kevin Federline?
I came all the way from Sacramento. We drove down just so we could witness a train wreck.
Awesome!
Oh my God.
That guy's a fan.
What is that, like 5-6 hours drive from Sacramento just to see the train wreck? That's my man.
Yeah. And, you know, not everybody purchased tickets to the show.
You guys have tickets, or are you hoping to maybe score some later?
We got them for free from a girl at our work.
You guys knew you found out how many tickets were actually sold, right?
We talked to someone at the House of Blues afterwards. They said a little over 90.
90.
And the rest were given away.
Yeah.
You think they made an announcement at the work? You know, hey,
we have some tickets for Kevin Federline. If anybody wants them, seriously, anybody, just come up and ask us.
Happy Thanksgiving. All employees are welcome to leave at noon with a half day. And we have some Kevin Federline tickets available. L.A. Fire Department shows up.
Yeah?
Yeah. And by the way, what a great gig being a Hollywood firefighter, because all they do is pretty much go around to the different clubs making sure that the fire codes are—
Go to clubs, go to shows.
Reason. Yeah. So they show up, and we have to talk to them.
What are you doing here? Is it because the L.A. County Fire Department has known that Kevin has been known to play with fire?
No, we're here to remove everybody who passes out from boredom.
So I take it you're not a big Federline fan?
No, we're here to save everybody from Kevin Federline.
Nice.
The fire department mocking him.
Those guys were so cool.
Yeah. Save them. Everybody from
so
boredom.
These guys came from the Jay-Z show down the block to Kevin Federline. So I was like, ooh, the difference, you know?
Really? Yeah. You don't go in the opposite direction with your gig that night?
I mean, the curiosity was rampant around Los Angeles. That's all it was to it. More fun with the fire department.
I think.
No, I cut that one out. We're going
okay,
to the
that's fire. What I thought. Yeah. There's most of the people there. Would you say we're there for comedy, right, guys?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It would have to be. I mean, who would really want to see him play?
It was funny because there was people outside who would walk up to the ticket window and be like, can I have a ticket for free? And then I was like, no, the $26.50. And they're like, nah, forget this. There's people outside like, oh, man, we didn't get free tickets. So, you
know. Well, there was one girl who was a true Fed head.
Really?
Yes. Fed.
There was a real fan?
Real Fed head. And We were fascinated by this chick.
I think he's a really good rapper. He just needs to be a little bit more coordinated with his music and his movement. He's hot.
You find Kevin Federline attractive?
Yeah, I love the guy. I love the guy. He's cute.
Do you have tickets to tonight's show?
Almost. I was supposed to go to the one in Anaheim, and I had I was going to get the ticket. I went to go buy the ticket, all this stuff, and he canceled out. I don't blame him because Anaheim sucks. So I was like, I know he's been playing West Hollywood because all the stars and celebrities play here, so.
Yeah, because this is a huge draw for stars and celebrities, the Kevin Federline show.
Yeah, it's the day before Thanksgiving. It's my Thanksgiving treat.
So I think we're all willing to chip in $1.75.
Absolutely not.
If you lie down and let us circle all over you.
What's that?
Well, we'll show you.
Pants or something?
Well, yeah, we do take down our pants.
Oh.
Mike.
It was Omar's bad influence.
Here's what I like. Oh, yeah, that's Omar's influence. Here's what I like is Mike says, oh, we're willing to pony up about $1.60 a piece. And Omar goes, absolutely not. Not even worth spending $1.50 for her.
So, Omar, you know you guys do all that zany, Omar, I wish you were here at the...
Right.
His real behavior, not all that far off from your wacky stories and tales.
That's what it's based on, is Omar, when he parties, really does go out of his mind. And that's why it cracks us up every single time we're doing something fun, that Omar has to be back here at the studio. Because if anyone should be there having fun, it should be Omar, the way he parties.
We get into the show, and we go.
Well, this is, and I mean, he's supposed to go on at 9 o'clock.
Right.
He doesn't go on till 11.
No.
Okay?
Oh,
so not only do we have 2 hours to kill, but we go across the street to the Saddle Ranch, and I get loaded
you
some
start
more.
Drinking, sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
loaded.
Sure.
Me and Dave are hammered.
Yeah.
And we get into the place. The first place we go to is the bar. It's now close to 11 o'clock. And I'm like, where's Omar? Where's Omar? And Dave and I are kind of worried because he shouldn't be on his own at this point.
Right.
He comes back with a bottle of Jack Daniels.
A bottle?
Yeah, so check this out. So we're walking. We got like VIP access or whatever. So we're by like where the foundation room, which is upstairs, right?
Upstairs.
So I'm walking and I'm following these guys. I'm like the last in line, you know? And all of a sudden, I see, you know, a group of people walking the other direction. And I notice that the door says Kevin Federline on it. And I'm like, well, all right then. So I followed the other group of guys and I acted like I'm with them, dude. So I'm in Kevin Federline's dressing room.
That's
no way.
Awesome.
I swear to God, dude. And the only people that weren't black in that room was me and Federline.
Really?
It was awesome, dude. So about 10 seconds after I get in there, you know, I got hit up. I'm like, you know, they're all like, who are you with? And I was like, I'm with Power 106, man. Totally cool.
And they were fine?
And they're like, all right. Yeah, totally.
They didn't
dude.
Care. You didn't have any of the right
nothing.
Pass,
nothing.
Wristband,
just,
nothing.
I had 2 wristbands. I don't know what the hell they meant, you know, but they're like, all right, fine.
That's awesome.
You could be one of the good fellows for all they know, for all I know, for God's sake.
Exactly, dude. 1 of 9, you know? It was crazy, dude. So I was just like, I was thinking in my head, oh, dude, I got to do something great. I mean, like,
right.
You know.
Because you're sitting with Federline.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was like, okay, you know, I don't want to get kicked out
right.
now because I haven't seen the show. So I was like, all right, you know, I'm just going to, you know, kind of like observe what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, all was going on is, you know, you got people just drinking alcohol and stuff, and he was just kind of like holding a microphone. I don't know if it's a special microphone or what the
deal
was.
Kevin Federline had a microphone in his hand?
He had a microphone in his hand, and he was just kind of like pacing back and forth and stuff. And then about, you know, 5 minutes go by, then it was showtime. All right, showtime, ah! You know, and then they walk out the door. And then I was the last one in there. And I'm looking, all right, I need to take something, dude. I need to take something. I'm like, where, you know, there's like no clothes, no nothing. But I saw a bottle of Jack, dude. I'm like, swipe, dude. Bam, dude.
That's why I love Omar, because his thought is the same as mine. I've got to take something.
Yeah, dude. You know, dude.
Now is the moment I must steal.
You know, dude. It was all about it, dude. So I roll up in the bar, dude. I'm like, hey! You know? So it was party time in the bar, dude. It was awesome.
And you wonder where, I mean, they metal detect you and they pat you down and everything. And I'm like, how did Omar get a giant bottle of Jack Daniels into a venue? And it turns out it was his.
Well, sick.
Then the show starts.
Right.
Omar's, we're all down on the floor area right in front of, and, you know, the show's going fine. And all of a sudden I see a big drink fly through the air and on the stage.
Oh, no.
And I say, wow, well, that was crazy. Who did that? And sure enough, I see Omar like a sniper. He's making his moves, trying to hide from the security.
So what did you throw? You didn't throw the bottle, did you?
No. At this point, the bottle was upstairs somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah, whatever. You know,
what did you throw? A drink?
A drink. Yeah, it was just a drink. Yeah, exactly. It was like a Diet Coke or something. It was a plastic cup. So
did you throw it at K-Fed?
No, it was, you know, he had just gone on stage, and it was one of his breakdancers or whatever, so it got on her.
Did they find you and throw you out?
No.
Not yet.
Awesome.
Not yet. They were totally making their move, but Omar's good. Yeah. He's crafty. Yeah, he's got guile. He was working his way through the crowd.
They didn't even see me.
Plus, you're from Power and All.
Yeah, exactly. You can't mess with Tito, you know? So then that happens or whatever. So then, you know, I'm like kind of like getting ticked off that nobody's really booing or doing nothing. There's actually people into the goddamn show.
No, not possible.
Oh, no. Dave, Mike, back there.
Yeah. Those of you just tuning in, we're talking about the K-Fed show. It was at the House of Blues Wednesday night before Thanksgiving. And the guys were there, and you guys, like, rightly so, thought everybody would be booing or laughing or something.
There was a lot, like, especially pressed up against the stage. There was people really into it, you know, like, okay. And that infuriated Omar.
That really ticked me off, dude. It set me off, dude. I don't know what. I was talking for hours afterwards. I can't believe he's. It was insane. So I took it upon myself. These guys weren't going to go to the very front row. I'm like, screw that. You know, bam, dude. I'm in front, dude. K-Fed's no more than maybe 6 feet, 7 feet away from me, dude. Two middle fingers in the air. You suck, boo. You suck. Wait, and what happens? And then he calls me out on it. He's rapping, and he's all, what's he say? He says,
he's like, he stops, pretty much stops rapping, comes right up to Omar's face. I see you hating. Yeah, throw those middle fingers up. Keep hating. Look at me. Drink your haterade. I stole your queen. Look at me. I'm on stage. I'm balling.
Veins coming out of his neck. I had no idea what he was saying, because at that point, it was the greatest moment ever, dude. I was like, yes, I can't believe this is happening, dude.
Look, you went looking for that exact moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
I remember, like, Wednesday morning of last week, he was like, I'm so going to get in his face.
That tips me off, and I'm trying so hard. I have the recorder.
I was just going to say, where's the audio from that?
Okay, it's so loud in there. I could see the levels are just peaking. So I'm trying my hardest. I'm now crouched in a corner working on this recorder, trying to get the levels down.
It's a really complicated machine. It's hard to turn
it. So at this point, he's trying to get the recorder going, and then I'm like, dude, you know, I turn around to Dave. I'm like, dude, did you guys see that? And then Dave calls me over. You know, he calls me over or whatever. So I'm like, you know, making my way towards the back of the club.
Right.
And out of nowhere, dude, I swear to God, I didn't look at this guy or whatever. One of the K-heads or whatever you're calling them.
Fed heads.
One of the Fed heads comes up, and he's, like, starting a fight with me, dude.
One of the hardcore fans?
Yeah. I swear to God.
Well, I think that was awesome. Me. I think that guy was trying to rush me because there was a guy in front of me who was all into it, and I was booing, like, you know, in his ear. And the guy turns around and says, what the F, you know, why you hating, stop it. So I go, okay, and I boo louder. He starts throwing stuff at me, and I'm like, all right, you know, I'm going to let it go.
I didn't see any of this.
And then finally, I got mad, and I threw something back. I threw ice back at the guy.
Right.
And that's when that guy just came out of nowhere, and that's when I just happened to call Omar, and that's when
this whole ruckus starts.
And, of course, security is all over my ass.
Now, wait a minute. Did the guy attack you? I mean, were you fighting?
Well, he was attacking me.
Yeah, and then he came up, and then him and Omar were just going to go at it.
As soon as anything could escalate, dude, security was on me like crazy, dude.
See, they have a sense of humor there.
No, go check it out.
There was plainclose security everywhere. So I
cops, you mean?
They mixed in. They had Wigger uniforms on. They mixed in with the crowd.
I think these were K-Fed security, you know what I'm saying, to keep people like me in line. You know what I'm saying?
Like you.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, I mean,
you know, Omar's going crazy. So I got to jump on Omar, and I'm choking him, and he's carrying me.
Wait, but you're choking Omar?
Yeah, yeah, because because security told me, get him out of here. Yeah. We got to talk to him outside.
And by the way, I got it. If you haven't seen Omar when he's drinking, you won't understand that was an exercise in futility. Right? Yeah. You can't choke out Omar.
I missed this whole thing. Yeah. I'm looking at the recorder, trying my hardest, and all of a sudden I hear a melee. I mean, loud. It turns into a fight. And I look up, I see this side hat ways wigger guy getting held by security, and I turn to the left. Well, what's going on? And Dave is rear naked choking Omar, and a security guard is pushing Omar back, and his face is beat. And I'm trying so hard to figure out what's going on.
I'm off my feet. Omar's carrying me. I have to literally, you know, lean back and choke him.
This really does sound like the stories we make up about him when we're exaggerating.
Awesome. Next thing you know, we're out in the parking lot getting talked to by security and the House of Blues management.
That's
and everything.
That's the best. You guys deserve a raise of some kind. That is the best.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you got one interview afterwards.
Finally, the show's winding down. We had to talk to someone and ask them how the show went.
There's a spectrum of good to bad, and this fell in the bad. But it was so bad, it was actually almost good. Like the movie Jason X, or Bring It On, Jason X. It was that bad.
Wow.
That's
dude,
awesome.
That says it all. You guys did the Lord's work.
Yeah.
Best night.
Nice job. Good times.
Good times.